Welcome to Manga Cubed, episode 86, your one-stop for manga news and commentary for the week of February 24th, 2014. I am your main host, Derek, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mo.
Eat cereal, it's good for you.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, really? I noticed that through all these times I've not been eating cereal, I always feel lightheaded throughout the day. And even when I'm staying inside, which is weird.
Well, you need carbs, and cereal has carbs. There you go.
Oh, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it's another Monday morning over here, and we are here to talk about manga, because that's all we do with our life, apparently.
Not mine, but that's just more of a hobby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, if I really could write a manga, I would, but get into drawing with
me. I didn't say manga, writing manga is all we do with our life. I said talking about it. You don't need to be able to write to talk about something.
Well, what? So how was your weekend?
It was good. Spent a lot of time traveling to California and back.
And then, funny, I was in California the entire time, but I never saw you.
Yeah, well, because I was at a cousin's wedding the entire time. I wasn't traveling, basically.
Once again, I've never been at a wedding.
Nope, this one was fun. It was a little more elaborate than the other weddings that I've been to, so it was
Do you ever have family ask you, hey, Derek, when you get married?
All the time.
Yeah, I get that.
I don't want to talk about it. I really don't want to talk about it.
Cousins are like getting married and stuff, and they already have kids, and I'm like, and me and my sister are like,
we're
too busy with our own stuff.
Yeah, well, this cousin was several years older than me, so I don't feel as bad as when the younger ones get married. Mm. So, that being said, talking about a fulfilling life, let's talk about manga, shall we?
Sure.
Or specifically, let's not even actually talk about manga, let's talk about news of manga. Starting with the Japanese comic rankings for... Why is there an ad in the way?
Seriously, why is there an ad in the way?
There's like an ad blocking the damn title. There we go. Japanese comic ranking February 10th through the 16th. And good, the ad's going to have a first note. All right, starting in 10th place.
10th place, we have Mahoka Koko no Yutosei Volume 3.
And 9th place, we have Baltzar Militarismus Volume 6.
8th place, Yozakura Quartet Volume 15.
7th place, Dose Mo Nigeranai Volume 6.
6th place, Tayo no Ie Volume 10.
5th place, Maid Sama Volume 18.
4th place is Shokugeki no Soma Volume 6, finally something we recognize.
Yeah. 3rd place is Gintama Volume 53.
Something I recognize but haven't been into lately. Mm. 2nd place, LDK Volume 14.
Huh. 1st place, we have Sukite Inayo. Say I Love You, Volume 12. Why does that one get a translation and the other ones don't?
I don't get it.
Oh well. Alright, and okay, moving on, we've got the New York Times Manga Bestseller List for February 9th through the 15th, starting with 10th place again.
Attack on Titan Volume 2.
No, I just read that one. 9th place, Kamisama Kiss Volume 14.
8th place, Attack on Titan Volume 1.
I read that one too. 7th place, Durarara Psycho Arc Volume 3.
Speaking of which, the new series should be published. The new series by the Durarara writer should be in Movie Shonen Jump as of, I think, now.
Yeah, we'll be going over it as soon as we get there.
6th place, Soul Eater, Volume 18.
7th place, Black Butler, Volume 16.
4th place, well, that's a big jump, Attack on Titan, Volume 11.
3rd place, Toradora, Volume 6.
2nd place, Naruto, Volume 64.
And 1st place, Bleach, Volume 59.
Udahana says no to your Naruto Hinata. What the heck is, why do they...
Yeah. But we're not even going to get into shipping questions.
We're not going to get into that.
Be quiet. Alright, last bit of regular news. We have the North American anime and manga releases for February the 16th through the 22nd. And with the anime, we have Hidamari Sketch Season 1 Blu-ray collection. Wait, what's the difference there? There's no difference. They just posted it twice. Weird. All right.
I think it's supposed to be DVD.
Yeah. Obviously, well, the DVD. Price is the same as the thing.
Yeah, so it's supposed to be DVD. It's okay. I understand people are busy and they have a tight schedule.
Yeah. Well, when it's... I don't know, yeah. Well, when it's... What they do professionally, they should probably proofread first. But anyway, next, what else do we have?
Jormungandr Season 1 DVD Blu-ray complete set and Perfect Order DVD Blu-ray complete set.
Yeah, and they doubled up on that one, too.
Jormungandr, so...
Yeah. Alright, and then we have Naruto Shippuden Blood Prison Movie 5 Blu-ray and DVD set collect releases.
Is this the one where Naruto goes to prison?
I don't know. I don't know and I don't care.
Let's just check. Just for the fun of it.
Mm-hmm. Alright, well...
Yeah, he goes to prison.
Oh yeah, I guess that's the one where it's all, oh hey, you're accused of something, and we're taking you in, even though we should not be such shitheads and actually trust you, given that, you know, we've known you longer than this person accusing you.
So. Yeah, I never understand filler.
Well, yeah, the filler. Yeah, this one sounds particularly egregious.
It's why One Piece just works for me, even though some One Piece movies are just... Actually, no, none of One Piece movies sound really, like, dumb.
No, they don't. They seem to. I mean, they have some that aren't as great, but they, for the most part, seem to avoid the really stupid stuff. Anyway, carrying on. Robotics
Notes. That's your part. Go ahead.
That's mine. Robotics Notes DVD and Blu-ray Part 1 and Limited Edition as well.
Okay. So, Time Bokan OAV Royal Revival Blu-ray and DVD.
Yep.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, and let's see, what is that? Oh, it's... Oh, that looks like an old, old show. I think I've seen it.
Kitchen Robot. Takes on the words.
This seems like an old... Yeah, one of the characters looks like Waluigi. But yeah, this seems like an old show that I've seen here and there, but I don't actually know anything about.
It does, yeah.
Interesting.
I wonder if where Waluigi came from. Hey, I got a character, and they're like, hey!
Thief.
We can't sue them in Nintendo.
Yeah. Well, okay. Let's see, we got the manga releases. Blood Blockade Battlefront, Volume 5.
Blood Sea, Volume 3.
Blood Lad, Volume 4. What the hell?
Bokurano, Ards, Volume 10.
Batum, Volume 5.
Cage of Eden, Volume 13.
Ugh. The Disappearance of Nagato Yuki-chan, Volume 5.
Is this Gangsta, Volume 1?
Is This a Zombie, Volume 7?
Jack Frost, Volume 9.
Judge, Volume 3.
Number 6, Volume 5. It's not Number 6, it's just called Number 6.
Uh-huh.
There's no rank.
Yeah. Pandora Hearts, Volume 20.
Guella Magi Kazumi Magica, Volume 4.
Strike Witches, Maidens in the Sky, Volume 1.
Sermai Romai, Volume 3.
And World War Blue, Volume 4.
World War Blue. What's that about?
Yeah, let's see. What else? And then we have other releases. We've got Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze for the Wii U.
Earth Defense Force 2025 for PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360.
And the Strider PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC game.
It's on every mainstream console plus the PC. Also, it's also on Steam. That's why it's PC.
Pretty much, yeah.
I want to get it, but I was like, am I going to really play this? No, I don't think so. I got Witcher, and I haven't really touched it since because... It didn't turn out the way I thought it'd be. But hey, it was still a good deal.
Uh-huh.
I usually start slow from work. I'm still grieving over that.
Yeah, well, wait. Get a better computer.
I'll be quiet. Okay.
Alright, and... Okay, that's that. And I guess we have some other news to go over, do we not?
Yes, we do.
Go ahead.
Manga Box app adds Milk on the Farm by Bigata HK Sanri. Excuse me. My stomach. Mm-hmm. No, we can hear that, but anyways. The four-panel comic Milk on the Farm, Rakuno Meoku, follows Milk Ushijima, a girl who's moved after seeing a cow born on television. She enrolls in Tokyo School of Veterinary Medicine and thought her campus life was going to begin, but it turns out she is a complete airhead. Her teachers and fellow students are also a cast of crazy characters. Okay. So on republished B got to HK in Shueisha's Young Jump magazine from 2004 to 2011. The series inspired the 12-episode anime series Bigata AK Yamada's first time in 2010, and Funimation licensed and released the series in North America.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I haven't watched that one.
It was a series that ran in some Shueisha. I was like, okay, this kind of counts.
Yeah.
Although I have to admit, you know, as funny as it sounds being inspired after seeing a cow born on television, I'm sure there's more funnier ways people can start to do something.
Yeah, there's weirder stuff out there.
It's like, oh my goodness, I want to be a veterinarian. Really? You saw that calf being born? Okay. I think you have a reason.
All right, what else do we have?
Okay. Kodansha Comics announces Emma Toyama's Manga Dogs. Okay, summary of this. Kana Tezuka is a serious 15-year-old manga artist already being published as a pro, so when she finds out that her high school is starting a manga drawing course, even she gets excited, but it's a fiasco. The teacher is useless, and the only other students, three pretty boy artist wannabes, quickly adopt Kana as their unwilling sensei. But they all have ridiculous delusions about being an artist, and if Kana can't bring them back down to earth, she'll never get any work done.
Interesting.
Saw this series circling around before. Interesting. Cool.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen that one yet.
Check this out.
Yeah. Worth a shot. But, okay. What else do we have?
Okay. More Kodansha news. Kodansha USA to print Attack on Titan Omnibus Edition.
Son of a... I just bought the first two volumes.
That means I can get it.
Yeah, well, you can buy it. Let's see.
Well, I could, but I don't want it. I don't want it just because it's big.
Well, actually,
I would prefer to have it in individual volume because I like the little covers myself.
Yeah, actually, this one looks like it's not just going to be a typical omnibus like we saw with Genshin. This one is actually it's going to be 1,000 premium quality pages for a suggested retail price of $59.99. The Colossal Edition volume will have the same pages as the first five volumes.
Actual picture of how it actually scales out to be.
That's insane. Because, well, you take an average, say for example, one of the Genshin omnibuses, which is... also a monthly series, and you take two of those, you cut off a third of one of them, and you've got an absolute beast of a manga. And this one's going to be 7 by 10.5 inches. So it's going to be a bit bigger than normal.
That's pretty huge.
Yeah, and it's, let's see. It's...
I thought it'd be like double that, 24 inches. And it's like, hey, I have a...
No.
Colossal Attack on Titan Omnibus Volume 1. Not, why are you carrying that?
Not quite that big, I imagine. But yeah, I mean, this is... Their regular omnibuses are three volumes. But this, I'm kind of looking at it as like, interesting. That might be worth a look-see. But then again, I'm thinking, it'd be cheaper to just buy the regular volumes. Or at least.
Exactly.
Well, then again, okay, that's five volumes. It's borderlining it. But anyway, that's a pretty interesting
bit of news. First five volumes. Wow.
Yeah. Did you not hear me what I was saying?
No, I was zoning out.
Yeah, fuck the love of. But yeah, like I was saying, I was initially thinking, but I've already bought the first two volumes and the omnibus is usually the first three. But now I'm like, has a lot more actually. But still, $59.99, that's a bit of money right there.
I might get that if I have the money.
But yeah. All right, well. What have we...
This is some interesting news here. Zettai Karin children manga will enter its final arc in the summer. The series started in 2005, published by Takashi Shina. Also the creator of your personal favorite series, Ghost Recon Mikami.
Yes. Yeah, and it looks like they're entering high school in the summer.
Yes.
It'll be the final arc
Finally,
of the
won't feel
manga.
awkward.
Yeah, in addition,
I
Sheena
think won't
will
feel
put this.
awkward.
Oh, huh. In addition, Sheena will put the series on hiatus until summer. Okay, that would explain why the chapters have been a bit slow. But yeah, it's basically. Yeah, look at that. That is. Yeah, this is one of those series
Like
that.
there's four girls. One of their four girls.
You have to read the manga to find out.
Oh man, fine. I'm getting back into it.
Indeed, yeah. But this one is. It's interesting. We don't know. It says the final arc, and I mean, we all know what that means. That doesn't mean, oh, we're just gonna like do a few chapters and then it's done. No, that usually means, yeah, it's gonna be running for a couple more years, but it's the final arc. But
Yeah, you know how, well, it's not gonna be like Bleach. You know how Bleach was, right? And still, and it's about, and
and
it's ending,
Naruto is
but
constantly going on about how this is the final arc, and I'm like, it's been going on for 5 years, you bastard. But yeah, so definitely Yeah, definitely interesting to see what will happen with it, what this will be all about. I'm pretty much caught up with the manga, but I do have some parts where I'm not entirely caught up. But okay.
Wait, is it published in North America here?
Nope.
Ah,
No, it is not, unfortunately, and
obviously
there are
reasons,
reasons for that.
obviously why. This
Yeah.
is awkward. We don't want to read it, and yet you publish Fullmetal Alchemist where a little girl gets killed.
Because death is better than fan service. Anyway,
The
let's move on.
pleasures first in violence, anyways.
Carry on.
Amimaru at Meguru Tojo's Clover manga. Okay, the story is described as England, late 19th century. Andrew Drake is a detective with the ability to see vision. With the help of his ability and his medical student roommate, Seth, he's tracking down a serial killer who's been slaughtering beautiful women all over London. Insert Jack the Ripper. Now, he's afraid that a young lady called Evangeline might be the next victim, but she's harboring a terrible secret. She might be the serial killer.
Yay.
No, that's just wife name. I just added that part because I just felt like I had to add it. Like, terrible secret. Well, I wonder what that terrible secret might be.
Probably not what you're thinking, because that's the first thing everyone thinks of. And only a bad writer would go, oh, I'm going to choose do this. And it's like, yeah, we all called that already before even reading your manga.
I called that before your manga was even created.
Yep. All right.
Anyways,
Yep. What else do we have?
that's not the same. I actually want to every so far every Amimaru that they've added, I actually want to read it.
Yeah.
Why must you do this, Europe? Anyways, Kodansha's first sales jump in 18 years, credited to Attack on Titan.
You don't say.
No kidding. Since it was Dragon Ball for Jump, and then later on One Piece for Jump. So
Yeah.
Kodansha is finally getting something.
Yeah, it looks like interesting. It's like this company. Let's see, Kodansha posted their fiscal results for the 2013 fiscal year, which is December 2012 to November 2013. On Thursday, the company garnered 120.272 billion yen, which is about 1.173 billion, which is a in revenue, which is a 2% increase from the previous fiscal year. The publisher's profits increased by 107% to 3.214 billion yen, which is 31.346 million. And this is Kodansha's first revenue increase in 18 years, and its first increase in both revenue and profit in 19 years.
It must be great to be a Kodansha employee. Yes,
Yeah,
finally,
and wasn't
my
it?
time has come.
Yeah, I can actually, and I actually think is like I'm pretty sure that Shueisha turned it down at first. I can just imagine whoever was responsible for that. It's probably been fired by now. But yeah, well, then again, to be fair, they do have a point. This is a lot grimmer and darker than what they normally do. But you know, maybe they need to change their opinion on that.
Wait a minute, wait a minute, wait. It was originally taken to some other magazine, but they turned
Apparently,
it
they
off.
took it to Jump first,
Ah.
and Jump said no because it was too dark, which I can totally see that. But
Really, John, you had Gantz, I believe,
I don't think
in.
they did.
Oh, no, they didn't. Oh, no, not something, I'm sorry.
No, that's a seinen magazine, seinen manga.
I know.
Maybe it was published by Shueisha, but yeah, I don't know. That makes me kind of wonder why he didn't take it. Well, I guess because he was insisting it was a shonen, so yeah, he wouldn't take it to his Attack on Titan to a seinen magazine owned by Shueisha. But huh, it's interesting. But yeah, so yeah, good for them. I think it's been kind of obvious that this that this series was that this was going to be a good year for them, all things considered.
Yeah, it was published in Weekly Young Jump.
What?
Dance.
Weekly Young Jump?
Weekly Young Jump.
Does that sound like Shonen Jump to you?
No.
No.
Still.
No.
But they took it to Weekly Shonen Jump?
Attack on Titan originally, yes.
What?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Well, I don't know.
Now Jump's like, oh man, we lost a big money maker there.
Yeah, they would have. Yeah, just imagine if Shueisha had have gotten this one in one of their monthly magazines, or maybe even in Weekly Shonen Jump, if they had just said, we'll take a chance on this dark one, and then suddenly they have One Piece and Attack on Titan. Can just imagine someone's kicking themselves.
It would.
Which it's good. It definitely is good to see that Kodansha has such a big seller for them, and it's also interesting to see. I'm pretty sure that they're a lot less strict about what gets cut, just since this one's been because originally the art on this wasn't that great, and so it's kind of they've kind of been keeping it around. But anyway, let's move on to the next bit of news.
Good on you, Kodansha. Good on you.
Indeed.
Fairy tale manga to run in 5 magazines this spring. It's 4 manga one-shots with Frosh, Juvia, Gray, Erza, Natsu, and Lucy, and the main manga itself. Okay, why Frosh?
I don't know. That's stupid.
I think it's meant to be happy, because it's not. I don't think it should be Frosh.
Yeah, let's see. 4 manga one-shots with, is it all of them together, I guess? Let me see, what does this say? Fairy Tale Festival. Each full-size chapter will be at least 20 pages in length. This guy is a lunatic. It's like so much work. The April issue of Bisatsu Shonen Magazine will feature the character Frosh and the Sabertooth Guild on March 8th. This year's 4th issue of Magazine Special will include a Juvia and Gray chapter on March 20th. Oh my. this year's 18th issue of Young Magazine will feature Erza on March 31st. This May issue of Monthly Shonen Magazine will publish a special chapter with Natsu, Lucy, and a mystery character.
Huh. Mystery character.
Interesting. I guess that one is going to be less shippy than the Juvia and Gray one. Hmm. Or at least I'm just kind of wondering, is like, huh, I wonder what he's going to do with that. With that exactly. What with... How in the manga he actually had Gray be like, yeah, I'm not interested in you, leave me alone. And now he's still having them in their own special chapter. So I'm like, okay, I don't know what you're trying to do here. But let's see. And yeah, that's pretty impressive that he's doing all that and still doing the regular manga.
All the manga artists are like, how do we do this? And he's like, I have so much energy, I cannot stop.
It's a shame that he's not actually, he's probably one of the hardest workers among manga artists. It's a shame that his manga isn't just a bit better than it is right now.
I think he has too many ideas, but he just doesn't have time to elaborate. He doesn't have time to flesh them out. That's the reason why. Remember how you said it, Mashima? When he does something good, he does it really good. When he does it bad, it turns out really bad.
Yeah, we forget that sometimes.
It just go like for most artists, it would just go, oh, it's good, it's good. For him, it's good, it's really good, and if it's bad, it's really bad. He just goes straight, like a jump down or a jump up.
Yeah, and it also looks like there's also a note that the anime series will return in April.
That too.
Let's see the first series on DVD. Okay, all right. Let's see what else do we have for news.
Okay, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Stardust Crusaders, the anime stand designs have been revealed. Yeah, you have to go Crunchyroll to see that. But the third installment of the anime series will start on April 4th, for those who did not catch that.
That'll be fun.
That's why.
They've got some pretty decent, I mean, obviously we can't describe it over the podcast, but
I'm worried about one of the characters because good. A certain religious group might be pretty upset. I don't know why, but they just
Wait,
might.
Which one?
The dude with the fire. The red guy.
Oh, right. Forget them.
Yeah, forget them.
Anyway, and okay, we also have an character art preview for the new Fairy Tail anime, which, again, go to Crunchyroll. You can see it there because we obviously can't explain how it looks, but it kind of is interesting. It looks a little
I like
bit
how Yubi turned out.
Yeah, it looks a little different from the first series.
I don't know. You watch it more than me. I can't tell. I just like how Yubi turned out. Maybe Yubi looks a lot more different.
Yeah, it looks like they did her hair longer than even the manga did. But, yeah, it looks pretty good, I must say. What else do we have for news?
Hang on. No, that's it.
That's all the news? Really?
Okay. That's all the news. Yes, that's all the news.
Cool. All right, then. Well, in that case, all right, well, I think it's time for us to move on to the next segment. We are going to talk about the three volumes of Genshiken, the second season that have been released, and we'll get to that right away. So we'll see you all there. It's time for the weekly manga review. This week we are going over in second season, volumes 1, 2, and 3, the only three volumes that are currently available. Once we finish with this, we will of course be caught up. And then once we're caught up, we can start, reviewing the new chapters, the new volumes as they come out. So kind of like what we do with Fairy Tail. And so, speaking of Fairy Tail, it's been a while since we had a new Fairy Tail volume. When's the next one? Better double check that. But yeah, so with Genshiken will be the second season that we are, second series that we are fully caught up on. Which, that'd be nice, because we're slowly moving towards the where I want to be, where when a new volume of a manga comes out, we get it immediately, and then we discuss it, you know? And let's see. All right. Fairy Tail chapter... Oh, son of a bitch, it already came out. I'ma put you on my order. Actually, wait, before I order it from Amazon, I should double-check and see what the discount is for me there. Right, the discount is Fascinating Podcasting. Listening to me as I... Oh, hey, it's 27%. Oh, cool. It's 27% off if you buy it off Amazon. Yeah, excellent. No, wait a minute. That's a Kindle edition, son of a... All right, how much do I save on the... Okay. If I buy the paperback off Amazon, it's only an 18% discount. I'm gonna run to Amazon. I mean, not Amazon. I'm gonna run to Barnes.
You can't run to Amazon.
Oh, I can if I believe in myself. But that's not what I was trying to say. I'm gonna run to Barnes and Noble.
If that worked, we could all fly with fairy dust.
Say what? All right. Let's see. The next Genshiken season 4. Sorry, Genshiken second season volume 4. Damn it. Let's see, that one will be out March 18th. Okay, so sometime next month, we'll take a quick break, and let's see, when does Fairy Tail...
Why is it called second season when it could be better be called second generation?
I guess they wanted to go with the anime theme. Let's see, that one's March
8th. I'm gonna call it generation, makes more sense.
But that's not what the actual title is.
I don't care.
But yeah, anyway... That one is March 18th, okay, and then Fairy Tail Volume 36 comes out March 25th, so I guess the week after. So, okay, we can do one week of Genshiken, and then 1 week of Fairy Tail while doing One Piece still, because we kind of need to keep going on with that. And let's see. Omnibus. Wait a minute. Okay, let's see, wait a minute, that's weird. The current omnibus that I see on Amazon, the cover looks completely different from the one that I have. How very odd. Okay, second season 5, let's see, when is that coming out? That one doesn't have a... Oh, September 16th, it looks like. Okay, yeah. Genshiken Second Season 5 is going to still be a while. September 17th, 2013. Okay, yeah, so a bit of a ways there. Let's see. That is... It looks so different. Weird. And, okay, I think that's that. As we talk about our shopping habits.
What shopping?
Yeah, but... Yeah, Fairy Tail 35, that one's already out, but the discount that I get for, with my corporate discount that I get from my company at Barnes & Noble is better than what I'd get on Amazon, so I'll just pick it up from there. And oh, hey, Nisekoi, Volume 2 is paperback. When's that being released? That one is March 4th. Hmm. We should take a second sometime and talk about Volume 1 of Nisekoi. I know we already review all the, you know, review the series as it's, you know, review the chapters as they come out. And we've talked about the series before, but we've never really gone in depth and talked about the volumes. You know what I mean?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, we should do that, and then we can go over Volume 2 when it comes out on March 4th. So we'll think of something with that. But anyway, that's enough preamble. Let's get into Genshiken, the second season, Volume 1. To start off with.
Okay,
so, and actually before we do that, a little bit of backstory. Essentially what happened with the deal with this series is, Genshiken was written as a complete work, and when it was done, it was meant to be completely done. But I don't know maybe what exactly the reason behind this is. Maybe the author was having a little bit of hard time getting another series going. But essentially what happened was he did a special chapter that was basically the chapter 1 of season 2. And basically it was just sort of like meant to be a limited time kind of, oh, this is just a one-off sort of anniversary celebration for Genshiken. And then I guess he did another he did another one-off chapter, and then another one. And then eventually by about the second volume, I guess, they decided, you know what? This isn't just a limited time thing. This is for real. The series is back. So we're doing a second season.
Really?
Yeah, which is kind of interesting because it's definitely a much better sort of fate than I've seen with a lot of authors with popular series where they try something else, it doesn't work out, and then they, you know, and then they try something else and then they come back to what made them famous, and they don't do quite as good a job.
I'm sorry, Watsuki's the best example for this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he did the whole, you know, he did Rurouni Kenshin, everyone loved it. Then he did Buzo Rankin, which I think was good, but it guess it didn't it didn't last beyond 10 issues. 10 volumes, I mean.
And then there was Gun Quest something, whatever one.
There was something with Frankenstein, but that one, I don't know what was up with that one. That one never even got, you know... Nobody ever even scanlated it or anything. It didn't come over out in the West, in the States, anywhere, or any other country. So I'm not sure what exactly happened there. But, yeah, it's kind of a shame that. And then he came back and he did a Rurouni Kenshin reboot deal. But he ended, you know, but that didn't end up very well. The interesting thing about Kyo Shimoku's second season of Genshiken is that it could have easily been a disaster. You know, it could have been he can't do anything else, so he's just coming back to what made him popular in the first place, you know? But honestly, well, just from the first volume alone, I think it would be really hard for anyone to say that this is legitimately just a cash, you know, just a cash-in on the popularity of his first series, or, well, not his first series, but the first season of Genshiken. You know, because, I mean, you could be forgiven for thinking that, but at the same time, what you get instead, and of course, we can't really do much of a plot summary per se, we can tell you about the new characters, because it's basically an entirely new cast, with the exception of Kanako, Ogiwe, and are still around, and now Sue has made good on her threat to come go to school in Japan.
Wait, aren't you forgetting to mention someone else?
Oh, well, no, that was deliberate. Just like he's constantly forgotten by the characters. No, I actually did. But he plays a much lower role. It's, of course, that guy.
wondering if you ever play a more important role, but I guess
not
maybe
really.
It's not that time yet.
No, not really. But yeah, anyway, it's Kuchiki that he's still around, but he doesn't. He's kind of shoved to the side unless
the only Kuchiki nobody likes because he's not Kuchiki enough to be Kuchiki.
For those of you that didn't get that, that was an obtuse Bleach reference. But yeah. So basically what we have is we continue the series a year later after the end of, not a year later.
I think it's right after the original Genshiken crew
graduates.
The original three.
Yeah, right after the graduation and also right after the new school, right kind of like as the new school year is starting because Sue is now officially a student at the school.
She intends to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you also have them talking about how they haven't been able to get any members because last year when they tried to do it, Kuchiki kind of messed things up and nobody wanted to join.
He terrified people.
Mm-hmm. So what we have instead is Ogyui, as the president decides that she's going to try to attract people, and she does so by doing sort of like a live art display where she draws this piece to try and get people in front of everyone try and get people's attention. And she does manage. She attracts the attention of these people. Anyway, no, just joking. Okay, the first one is Yoshitake Rika,
mm-hmm.
who is she's a Fujoshi, mm-hmm. Fan of Yaoi, and her special interest lies in historical, basically history and historical characters. Especially the, which period it is? Is
Sengoku era.
Yeah, I was about to say Bakumatsu, but then I was like, no, that's not right.
No.
And I was thinking, it's like, darn you, Watsuki.
Bakumatsu is like in the late 1800s.
I know when it is. I couldn't remember the name, okay?
Sengoku was like in the 1500s, 1600s. And like in the early 1600s.
Yeah, okay, yeah, and she's basically, it's the one that they have so many series have been made about, just focused on that, because apparently there's a lot of fangirls and also fanboys that are big into that period of history. I guess it would be kind of similar as someone that's really interested in, like, the Hundred Years' War or the Crusades.
Why couldn't there be video games based off of those Dynasty Warriors style?
I'm not
kidding about that.
Well, there was a bit of one based on the Crusades. It was like what called Infernal Crusades, Knights of the Temple, or something like that. It was a pretty decent. It was an interesting game. I only played a little bit, but then it disappeared.
I'll look that up.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think what I like about it is it kind of does a pretty good job at.
There we go.
Yeah, giving accurate attack animations for the for the type of weapons that were being used. Another member of that now joins the group is Mirei Yajima, who is a heavier girl who is sort of a standard otaku, except she is also a Fujoshi. She's like tries to be an artist, but she's not very good.
She seems like a female Sasahara.
A little, I don't know.
No, it's almost gone, but I guess not.
Yeah, but then we also meet another character who is, whose full name is Kenjiro Hato, and she is a girl, except she isn't. Turns out she is a boy who also happens to be a Fujoshi.
It's a trap! Yeah.
Literally, yes. No, but he's, Hato is basically a fan of Yaoi, except he's kind of he's uncomfortable in, talking about it around other Fujoshi since he's a guy. So he cross-dresses, and that doesn't last very long. At first, everyone's like, oh, hey, it's another girl, but then he's immediately uncovered, and they realize, oh, hey, you're a guy and you like and you're cross dressing because you like Yaoi stuff. And so it's basically these are the characters that we get, and they kind of get to see them mingling with the other with the established characters and doing it pretty well. The focus for the first volume is pretty evenly split between the established characters and the new characters as we kind of sort of like we get on a little bit of a hey, remember these old characters moment early on, but then sort of towards the halfway point of the volume we start focusing a lot more on the new characters with a bit more of the old characters mixed in there here and there, especially with Madarame, and a good focus of several of the chapters is just sort of Hato and his, you know, just him, his kind of, you know, his cross-dressing, the fact that he likes Yaoi even though he's not gay, which is sort of like made made explicitly clear, and how, you know, just sort of like how he works psychologically. That's a lot of what this volume focuses on.
Yeah, Hato is more like a psychological type of study-ish.
He's an interesting character in that, you know, it's kind of hard to say exactly what his deal is. I mean, it's pretty straightforward, but at the same time, you're sort of like wondering, is like, okay, is it actually what he's saying? Is he actually what he says he is? And so it makes for a very interesting hook of a character, and I think that's what kind of really, and since it's a good thing, because these first three volumes especially, and just the entire second season in general, is focused very much on Hato and who he, you know, just him. He's basically, he becomes the main character, and he's definitely gets more focus as the main character than any of the main characters in the first Genshiken, you know? Where it's like, you know, technically Sasahara was the main character, but a lot of times focus would be shifted to Saki, or would be shifted to Madarame. We still get a lot of focus on Madarame here, just sort of like, you know, carrying on his story, because, you know, his whole unrequited love and, you know, not being able to really fully grow up and move on is also really interesting. So those are kind of the main two characters that we focus on, while Yajima and, oh, dang it, forgot the name again. Yoshitake, that's it. Yeah, Yajima and Yoshitake.
I never actually got Yajima's first name until you said, oh, that's her first name.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that at all.
Yeah, that's her name.
Yoshitake's first name, because it got mentioned a few times later on in the volumes.
Yeah, definitely. Those two kind of, you know, they're still there, but they play more one of the background roles compared to some of the other characters, especially in this first volume. It is definitely focused on Madarame and Hato, and also sort of like some of the other characters. So, but overall, I mean, this is the first volume. You see, oh, hey, Genshiken has a sequel, right? I wonder what this is like. So you pick up this first volume, and what is your reaction, Mo? So, like, as a fan of the original series, how do you feel about this continuation?
Well, I understand, you know, the bit with Oyue with her BL, you know, writing and all that, but then Hato appears, I'm like, you know, I'm still not over. I may be over it, but you don't have to just drag me to another bit. And
Yeah, it's, well, you know, it's kind of like...
It feels like Kiyoshimoku's trying to make a statement about
it's not like it's really,
but it's not obvious. A statement, but it just feels like it though. Like, well, why couldn't it be a female that likes females?
Well, you know, I mean, that's because that's not interesting. You already have that. We have like five of those characters already in the series, with another one that pops up from time to time. It's, you know, it just doesn't have that hook. If it's a girl, if Hato is a girl, it's just, oh, it's another Fujoshi, another Fujoshi. But with the fact that he's a guy, that's where all the conflict, that's where all the drama, that's where all the interest in the character comes from. He's there because, you know, that's what's interesting. I mean, if it's a girl, you don't have the, wait, why does he like Yaoi even though he's not gay? Kind of thing, you know. If it were a girl, it'd be like, well, she likes Yaoi because she's a girl. I mean, isn't that the standard? I guess that is kind of the main question there, is that do you feel that the strong focus on Hato as the main character and not the characters from the previous series? Like, I mean, Sasahara barely makes an appearance in this volume.
It's kind of because he's generally got whatever he had done already. He's graduating stuff.
Yeah, and so you have yeah, and you kind of have to though. Like, you kind of have to wonder with that just because.
And we got Ojui's, you know, Ojui's the new president now. She's pretty much got her story. Mm-hmm. It's not completely wrapped up because as of later volume, we'll find out there's still some bits still
left
to deal with. But for the most part, she's kind of not.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, she got over her big sort of like, you know, character sort of like conflict. But at the same time, you kind of have to wonder. I guess that's kind of the big question here is, you know, are these new characters good enough that that you'd be able to enjoy reading this for those characters alone, not because the fact that it's a sequel to Genshiken. I mean, is this something, would you be able to read this if you had never read Genshiken and you just picked this first volume of season 2 up? And
probably.
Yeah, I think my answer would be yes. I would still be really confused about, wait, who are these characters and what, and go back and read the first season. But at the same time, I feel that it stands on its own enough without being just a constant, hey, remember these characters? Aren't they awesome? You know, it definitely continues on the trend that the first series had of, hey, these characters are gone, here's the new ones. You know, it's just that since Sasahara was the main character of the first season, you couldn't really have him, you know, you couldn't really continue it as this is a straight up just the same manga if the main characters graduated. Here you can still do that because it's, you know, it's a new story basically. Mm-hmm. And so though I do wish that he'd pop up more often because, you know, it just feels weird that he just so rarely shows up, and even when Ogiyo is around, I mean, he sometimes shows up, but
well, you know, that's the deal with sequels these days. I mean, they stamp on the word sequel to a story, and what they do is just have like the character from the previous story appear every once in a while, or make a cameo. Go, look, there's a character. You happy? The sequel, see, the true sequel. Like,
yeah,
come on now.
Yeah, right. it's the Legend of Korra syndrome.
But in this case, Sasahara graduated, so it kind of counts. He can't be there all the time. Plus, he's working as a manga editor, so that's.
Yeah.
We know how that works.
Well, yeah, I think, yeah, but still the point is that's the strength of the second season, is that it's not relying on those established characters, but at the same time, as a fan of the first series, I would really like to see more of those established characters popping up here and there, you know? It's sort of like, it's a bit of a kind of a double-edged sword, in my opinion. Namely, it's like, you know, on the one hand, I'm like, it's good that they did it like this. But on the other hand, I'm like, I really would have liked to see more of those other characters. So, but anyway, let's move on to Volume 2, which Volume 2 is actually really easy to discuss because it contains a pretty complete story in and of itself. You know, it's spread across multiple chapters, but at the same time, it has, you know, the opening and the beginning. Namely, the opening being that Angela has come back to Japan. And she is there for the Comic Fest. And at the same time, Ogiyue and her and the Genshiken are putting together a doujinshi that they are going to be selling along with Yabusaki. And then it turns out that Ogiyue worked way too hard and got herself sick, so she can't go to the Comic Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the meanwhile, during the Comic Fest, while she's out of the way and basically you've got Sasahara has a good reason for not being in the story because he's kind of with her, taking care of her, which I was like, oh, that's cute. But yeah, and while she's out of the way, you've got, you've got Madarame and Hato and Angela who are kind of having a in between the three of them, where Angela is like doing some heavy, heavy flirting, and Hato is bothered by it, kind of. You know, it doesn't flat out say why, but it's sort of like he's, you know, what his motivations are for feeling like that or getting or butting in. But it is kind of this sense that, the surface reason is that he knows that Madarame is still in love with Saki and that, you know, having a one-night stand isn't the same as actually having a proper relationship with someone. So that's why he's against Angela trying to, you know, just get Madarame into bed, basically. And the conclusion to that is actually really funny because Angela, after she's basically, you know, making everyone really uncomfortable, Sue basically has enough. and ends up using a chai kick from, which you may recognize from history's strongest disciple, Kenichi. And she ends up kicking Angela in the ass. And then Angela's like, okay, I'm out of here. And she's still trying to be all flirty, and Sue is just is like kicking her to keep her moving. It's like, Yankee, go home, she yells. Unfortunately for Hato and Madarame, Hato, while trying to think of a reason why Angela shouldn't be, you know, be flirting with him, yells out that he thinks that Madarame is a complete bottom, or as they say in Japanese, a souke, which basically means in any kind of relationship, he is the submissive partner.
Ironically, if you add the S in between the U and the U, and in between the both U,
Yeah, yeah, which I was like, huh, I wonder what that means. But yeah, but it also, in English, it's the character type is called a bottom, literally, because in a gay relationship, it means that's the one that gets the penis up the ass. So
thank you for the graphic description.
You're welcome.
No, I never wanted it. I don't think the viewers even wanted it.
No. But what viewers? We have listeners.
Listeners.
Yeah, but nonetheless, that Madarame tries. Madarame tries to play it off as, you know, it's like, oh, that's okay, but he realizes that all the girls have thought the same thing, and he's like, I'm an uke. And yeah, and then you have him like the Ogiwe tries to make Hato feel better about it by, you know, showing how she used to do, you know, draw erotic fantasy of, you know, Madarame and Sasahara. Mm-hmm. And I really love I do love the scene where Madarame comes back to the classroom while they're all looking at the drawings of him and Sasahara, and just the reactions from everyone. It's just brilliant. You got Hato's reaction, and all the girls just lunge, trying to grab all the pages back. It's a brilliant panel. And then Kuchiki decides that if it is what Hato wants, he will try to make it come true. He will make Kuchi Mada come through, and it's disturbing just the way they draw his face, but at the same time, it's an absolutely brilliant way to end the volume because it's so freaking hilarious. And you got Sue that basically just swear, like, her arm stretches while she bashes Kuchiki in the face, but it doesn't stop him, and Hato has to, you know, is like, knock him out by putting him in a judo grip while he's trying to grab Madarame's pants and pull them off. And it's, yeah, just the way Madarame runs away is pretty brilliant. And that is pretty much the end of the volume.
It got the awkward meter and shattered it.
Yeah, it is, yeah, pretty heavily making things really awkward. But I think this is a really great volume just because it contains that sort of pretty much that complete storyline in the single volume, which I thought was really great.
And yeah, I see there's something I want to mention. There was a bit where an old character, not more like a secondary side character, but still kind of has a connection to one of the main characters from ODU and from the previous scene.
It's what's her name? The girl from her
Nakajima.
Yeah, that one was really weird because, you know, it's kind of, you kind of get this, you know, you're really hard to figure out what her deal is, you know? And, you know, she drops a hint that, oh, there's something with what's-his-face, you know, they have some news with him, and she says, oh, no, we're not going to tell her, no reason to make Ogiwe's life any better. So we assume that it means that he's okay, you know, that he wasn't irrevocably harmed by the fact that he had gay doujinshi drawn of him. But it isn't, you know, it's left subtle, which I really like. You know, it's not ham-fisted, oh, as you know, he is now recovered and now has a wife with double D's. But really, he is compensating because, you know, he realized that, oh no, now he is gay, except he doesn't want to be, and so blah, blah. You know, just the kind of stuff, the kind of storytelling where it just gets really sort of like in detail where detail isn't needed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, in this case, it keeps it, you know, a lot more subtle, which I thought really works.
For the most part, I feel that Nakajima, the girl that potentially ruined the whole Yui's life up until she finally got it fixed in her own way, her mentality, I guess.
Yeah. Or whatever.
I think she's just petty. Just really petty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's like she's not even evil. She's just.
I mean, this isn't that kind of series where it can be, oh, this character is evil or whatnot.
No,
I know. It's more like she's kind of got a really horrible personality, but at the same time, she's not, you know, she's not completely terrible because, you know, she's still, for whatever reason, she was still going there to, you know, basically it's implied that she was going there to check on Ogiwe. To, you know, sort of like to make sure that she's okay, but at the same time she can't admit, you know, that she was wrong with what she did kind of deal. Mm. Which I thought was really, you know, it's really interesting.
Kind of similar to Yabusaki. Say Yabusaki and you are good friends now.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what I really like that, their friendship. Especially in the chapter where they all end up cross-dressing. No, not cross-dressing, cosplaying. Shut up. The two happen a lot. Yeah, where they all just end up cosplaying, and it just ends with Yabusaki showing up right as Ogiwe came in and put on a cosplay. And it's pretty brilliant where she just chews them out. And then we find out that since the next chapter, since Ogiwe is sick, it's just going to be Yajima and what's her name? Nyanko?
Yoshitake.
No, not her.
Who?
The girl that's with Yaburame.
The girl with... You know, wait. Is she the one with like the weird cat face all the
time? Yes, that one.
Nyanko.
One
with Yabusaki.
Yeah, Yabusaki. She's stupid. Yeah, Japanese names. Anyway, those people. I really love the scenes between, you know, the two of them and Sue. Just because Sue is just, I just love Sue. She's just, her modus operandi is fuck with everyone.
That is Demarie.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, she's basically like a cat herself. In that she knows who's uncomfortable around her and she just messes with them as much as possible. And, you know, she knows that Yabusaki is really uncomfortable around her, so she's just constantly, you know, giving her a hard time and messing with her. And I especially like the scene where Yanko ends up deciding that she's going to go look around. And she leaves Yabusaki. Yeah, with Sue. And just that panel where they're both sitting there and Yabusaki's just... got this expression of like, and Sue's just, her evil little grin is just brilliant. I loved it. And yeah, and it is, this really is a really fun volume. And also we should probably mention the, you know, sort of like some of the in-between sort of four coma inserts between chapters are a lot of fun. I think the one that's kind of hilarious in an odd way is where, you know, the four of them where they're talking about how Hato, you know, normally doesn't have these massive fake breasts that he puts on in his, you know, when he's cross-dressing, but in that specific class play he does. And so they're talking about he's like, oh, you know, I don't want, you know, the bigger they are, the more men look, so I don't really want the attention. And then, yeah, and then they're just like, oh, so you do stare. And it's like, you know, I'm just speaking in general terms. But it's like, oh, no, that's no good. We girls wouldn't know. It's like, well, I guess I kind of get it. And then they basically talk about how, oh, no, how, yeah, it doesn't matter what she wears. It's just like, and when she's just walking, it's like bouncing all over the place. And then but the really funny one is when you have Hato is where he's talking about how, you know, he does, you know, on the one hand, he doesn't want to make his chest look, the chest that he's wearing when he's cross dressing look unnatural. But at the same time, you know, he wants, you know, all the feminine symbols he can get, sort of like, you know, to make people believe more readily that he is female. And then he's just sort of like trying to compliment Yoshitaki by saying, is like, you know, that makes me so jealous of you, how even without any boobs you'd never pass for anything but a woman. And then just that caption was like, realized he was being rude partway through. And she's like, oh, well, yeah, whatever. And yeah, so I think, yeah, was there anything else you specifically wanted to mention this volume? I mean, there's quite a lot of material here to talk about, but, you know, we probably can't get through all of it.
Oh, yeah, there was a part where Madarame met Tosaka.
It's like, oh dear, what's going on? It's like, what's going on there? Why are you cross-dressing like that? And it's like, oh, you know, just promoting our
My company is promoting this game. I'm just doing my job. I'm like, oh.
He's like, oh dear, that's a problem.
Like, does Saki know about this? She probably does.
She doesn't care. I think she does, and I think she does care. She's just learned to deal with it. Because do remember when she found out that he's working for a porn company, and she's just like, oh no. It was quite amusing, yes. All right, well, let's move on to volume 3, where one thing worth pointing out is that Hato, towards the end of the volume, Hato and Madarame kind of have a talk between the two of them. And they kind of, after Hato sort of like realizes, oh, he's been, you know, away from the club room for so long because he's, you know, embarrassed because of what happened with Kuchiki. And then he notices the game that Kosaka's company made. And notice like, oh, hey, oh, wait, this game's about traps. And then he's like, oh, wait a minute. That one character was designed off of Kosaka, like, identical. And he's just like, what the crap? And Madarame is like, yeah, this company has issues. It's pretty brilliant. But anyway.
I did not do this. I assure you.
He's like, no, I did not. Yeah, he's like, he did. Didn't. Yeah, he's like, I did not get off to the Kosaka scenes. But yeah, that was a really weird kind of a really weird discussion, where he's talking about how, yeah, I mean, it's still serviceable as an arrow game, but at the same time, you know, you don't really think of the fact that they're actually guys, because it's all pixelated out and the characters, you know, and they basically are flat-chested girls.
Actually, the point there for Madarame actually says how it actually ends. I was like, well, what?
I know, it's like, oh, it just goes to show that no matter how depraved we may think we are, there is a level that Japan has reached that we are still trying to catch up to, and I hope we never do.
Actually, I'm questioning that other countries more depraved than Japan. Japan is just like, oh, we're just borderline.
We're just weird. Yeah, because I'm just like, wait, they're trap characters, but they all get pregnant? Japan, we need to have a talk about biology.
That is not how anatomy works.
Yeah, that was bizarre, but then again, I guess we kind of did it as well with that one Schwarzenegger movie.
Oh god, don't remind
that
me.
That one, yeah, too late.
Yeah.
But yeah, so with this volume, we have some stuff where we meet Yoshitake's... At first, we think it's her older brother, but it turns out it's actually her younger sister. And they have a bit of a scene where, once again, Hato Yajima accidentally sees him naked. Again. Well, not again.
Not the first
time. Well, I guess the first time she saw his underwear and the outline of him down there, but this time she flat out saw him naked, and it is horribly embarrassing. And, of course, it's completely Yoshitake's fault, which... As usual, I think out of all the new characters, I have to say Yoshitake is my favorite.
Yep.
Just because she's kind of a little bit like Sue in that she likes to just mess with people, except sometimes she can get a little bit more malicious about it.
She's got like her knuckles in her too, almost.
Yeah, a little bit of that. Well, at the same time, being more, you know, going too far very often.
Yeah.
And so it's like it's, but still, she's a lot of fun as a character. And then we also find out that they're going to put together a magazine, sort of like a, just a special edition magazine for the Genshiken for the school festival. And Hato is going to try to draw manga, but then it turns out he can only draw well when he is a, you know, when he's dressed as a girl, except he can only draw erotic yaoi illustrations.
But hardcore.
Then, yeah, but then at this end, but yeah, and he's like, you know, he does the panel layout, but it doesn't work. He just kind of goes into a daze and starts drawing the boy love. And then when he dresses as a guy, he draws this really weird art style that just looks terrible, but interesting in its own way.
Igor looks better than him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, and then after that, with that, where they're kind of like trying to discuss and figure out what the crap is going on, they decide that okay, yeah, Ogie will do the panel layouts, and then Hato will just draw it all in, and then we have the part with Madarame, and then we kind of, yeah, then we end the volume with the discussion of who had what romantic experiences, and it turns out that none of them had a proper romantic experience ever, except. Yeah, the closest one was Kuchiki, but it's because this girl asked him out, but then the next day she changed her mind.
Because he found out that he was a total weirdo.
I'm pretty sure, yes, that is what happened. So, I think, honestly, Volume 3, I would say, it's not quite as strong as Volume 2 narrative-wise, because Volume 2 is so well self-contained, but Volume 3 has a lot of interesting stuff, especially the introduction of, you know, a little getting to see a little bit of the past of the new characters, as well as just, you know, the comedic nonsense at the beginning, while also sort of getting into the main story that we're going to have for a while, which is that they're going to try to work together to put together a magazine, and you have these collaborations going on. And that's kind of the focus. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on. It's just not contained in its own individual, this is its own contained story. It sort of has more of an ending that is, yeah, we're gonna, you know, this is, you know, we didn't have a main storyline, so we're just sort of like, here are the chapters as they are. So the volume itself, not as tight as the second one, but still a lot of interesting concepts that are introduced. And that's my two cents on that. Mo, what's your opinion?
Volume 3 wasn't that bad. It wasn't as good as 2, like you said. 2, like you said, was more self-contained and there was more stuff to it. 3 was just, it wasn't all over the place, but it was just more like scattered here and there and such.
Right.
And, of course, there's some development on the new characters, of course. A little development, but not as much.
Right.
And, yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it gets a little more into the, I think this volume sort of like gets a little more into the, a lot more into the whole elements of this is, these characters are really hardcore into BL and stuff like that. And so it may get a little more uncomfortable for people that aren't 100% comfortable with, you know, that kind of stuff. So that might be a bit of a caveat. Honestly, I don't think it would be a very big deal because I read it. I love this second series, and I am about as conservative as you're gonna get. So, or maybe I'm not all that conservative as I may think I am. But
it's only if it's funny. If it was actually done seriously, you'd be like, I'm not reading this.
Possibly, the humor definitely does help, and I do feel that humor manages to bridge gaps that would otherwise not be able to be bridged. And it's definitely good because, you know, it introduces us to things that we may not have been as interested in before. Because, I mean, the first series was definitely more about the, oh, hey, this is porn, we like porn, while the second season is more, hey, we love BL. So it explores that a little more. But what's also really interesting about these first three volumes here is that you do notice a lot more that how up-to-date Kiyoshi Moku is on anime series.
Mm-hmm.
Where since the first Genshin-ken was quite a bit older, it, you know, a lot of the series are by now, you know, not as thought
about. I don't even know what heck they. I don't know what the word.
And not only that, but it also, one of the main focuses in that series, it was just sort of like, you know, made up series that are just meant to kind of be the stand-ins for actual series. While here, he applies more of the, no, these are real series. I'm just gonna change the name so that it's still recognizable, but it's not the same name because I guess copyright laws work weird in Japan, and so
yeah, they do. You know, instead of putting McDonald's, they put McDonald's or something.
Yeah, stuff like that, which is amusing, but you know, and but with this, it definitely allows you to keep up to date on what's current with anime. So it's sort of like there's definitely still a lot of. This is one of those series where you can enjoy it, just like the first one. You can enjoy it without having background knowledge, but the more background knowledge you have, the more you can enjoy all the references in the series. And yeah. But a lot of times in the manga volumes, there will be, you know, anytime something is not obvious, there'll be a reference there that, you know, that sort of like explains everything. And usually they'll have like the notes in the back where they kind of explain, like, for example, if it's not obvious when someone says, oh, hey, that's Zora from Ten Piece. If it's not obvious what it is, you just go to the back and, wait, is it there? There it is. Yeah, it says Zora is like a parody of the swordsman Zoro from One Piece. And so I'm like, okay, there you go.
That explains that. I like how they wrote Zoro instead of the actual manga that put Zolo.
Yeah, I really honestly...
What the heck?
I've heard there are reasons for it. But eventually,
but
one of
the
these.
Is the writer who wrote Zoro still alive?
I don't think it's that. I think there are other reasons. But, you know, basically, I think it's sort of like, yeah, it'd be too much trouble to actually bother with it. And I normally
just
don't.
Just one aura difference.
Well, yeah, but there's other reasons. I honestly don't care. I mean, on the other hand, if they bring out, like, these nice. So, like, you know, these nice quality omnibus editions, like extra-sized omnibus editions with the actual translation of the name, I would buy those in a heartbeat. But as it is, my mind blanks it out and just reads it the way it's supposed to be read.
Yep. But,
all right. Let's see. Did you have anything else you wanted to mention about Genshin Season 2, Volume 3, or any of the other volumes?
Well, as far as I know, it seems that the focus is generally going to be Hato's cross-dressing.
Pretty much.
And, well, it seems that he's got more to hide at the end of Volume 3.
Oh, yeah, there's...
Season 2.
Yeah.
I think that.
Yeah, there will be stuff to be said.
And I think, was it the first and second volume? He kind of had some... Was it first or third volume or something? I know first volume, it was just... One guy that appeared in looking for the girl version of him, and they were like, okay, that's gonna draw some problems. And then the guy returned again, and like, okay, he hasn't given up.
Yeah, it's a interesting little thingy there.
Stuff does happen.
Yeah, true. All right, well, I think that about wraps us up for the manga review. Then we're just under an hour, so let's go ahead and move on to the next segment. It's time for the manga commentary for the week, and this week we start off as usual with Weekly Shonen Jump, and we have a brand new series to talk about.
Yep, it is by Duvara's Ryogo Narita, and written by the art by Ryogo Narita, and written by Yuji Amano. I don't know who that is, but I swear that name sounds familiar.
Hmm. Alright. Well, do you want to start talking about giving our listeners a quick synopsis of what the series is about?
Okay, so the main character, Jig, protagonist generally, he comes to this city called Jinbo-cho. And it's a city where a bunch of different species live together and stuff. And he came there because... He's looking for someone to lift his curse. And this curse apparently turns out to be some sort of contraption attached to his back that will attack anyone or anything that attacks him, but leaves him unharmed while attacking whatever attacked him to fold back. It's kind of similar to Meliodas' counter.
A little bit. I'm actually thinking it's more similar to Gaara, actually.
It reminds me of the Pokemon attack Bide. How the more damage you do to it, the more damage it will return. Except, it's actually with Bide, you get attacked by it first, so that's all I'm saying. Not Bide.
What, we're trying to up each other in our comparisons here?
It's like Wobbuffet using counter, except it has it first get attacked first, so it doesn't work that way, I guess.
No, it's much...
It's Mirror Force, there you go.
No, I'm pretty sure the best comparison is that it's Gaara, because remember, when he was first introduced, not only did he have a curse, but that curse protected him and attacked others, which is exactly what our main character's curse is doing here. Which, yeah, to make things clear, it's basically, it's a curse, yes, but it's not so much that the mechanical thing is a curse, it's more there's a curse on the mechanical item on him that is meant to be sort of a saving his life kind of thing.
Yeah, the machine itself is cursed. Yeah, mm-hmm. to save his life.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was basically terminally ill, and this person who just called the director saved him by attaching him to his back. But because of it, like I said, it's cursed. So. He's looking for someone to hire a bodyguard. He gets directed to some place where he can go hire a bodyguard to not protect himself, but to protect the city from him. Which is interesting, because it's like, oh, I don't need protecting, the city needs protecting from me. It's like, I'm Batman. Everyone, wait, dang, I lost, you do it. You got the Batman stuff. We haven't mentioned Batman thing in a while, actually. We haven't mentioned a Batman thing in a while.
No, we haven't. I feel like a failure.
Wow.
Well, I mean, I could make a comparison here in that the secondary main character wears a mask, much like Batman wears a mask. It also has ears that stick up, not quite as pointy as Batman's ears, but the similarities are, of course, there. And it is his purpose. He is one that protects people, much like Batman, in the case where the police cannot help them, much like Batman. And holy shit, that is way more similarities than I realized.
The only thing is, Batman is not invisible.
No, but he can be.
Oh, yeah, he can strike fear and make it feel like he's invisible.
And all that.
So, yeah, so Jake hires Choma Yabusame to protect the city from him. And... Yeah. Oh, yeah. Then they go on about some I guess these are like, I guess I consider these like the devil fruits to this series or
kinda. In as much that they're kind of the magic items, they're very similar to the treasures in Magi, to the Dragon Balls in Dragon Ball, to the tailed beasts in Naruto, sort of.
Magic. But basically, because the items are ranked, I was thinking more of the so-called late and terrible magical. And
well, yeah, somewhat. Except these are a little more mystic because they were created by dragons. Which already...
Oh, yes, we got to mention that.
Yeah, already from that point, I'm like, dude, sign me up. Freaking dragons?
Dragons.
Yes, there are. Apparently, this is a fantasy world. We probably should explain that. It's not just different races. It's specifically fantasy races, the kind of what you'd see in JRPGs. A lot of times, you know, elves and orcs and trolls and stuff like that.
Trolls and Lamias.
pretty much. Yeah, and so, yeah, so it's kind of a one of the, it's kind of one of those, it's a fantasy world, but a modern fantasy world, and not like a, oh, this is the real world, but there's fantasy creatures hidden. It's more, no, this is Tolkien, well, no, not Tolkien's, not so much. This is Dungeons and Dragons in the 20th century or the 21st century.
I like that. That's what I've been trying to do for the whole longest time. Anyways.
Actually, it's exactly like is Shadowrun. Which is basically exactly that. It's D&D creatures, but in a modern setting. So, there you go. Carry on.
But yeah, so the so-called items are actually called heirlooms, and they have 5 ranks, and apparently a rank E item is worth a mansion.
Works for me.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is going to go the Toriko route, where they start off with, this is the lowest rank of these special things, and it is so incredibly powerful or so incredibly valuable, and then we get like to the rank triple, like quadruple, quintuple S ranked special magic items and stuff.
Not there at all for some reason.
No, they'll be there.
And F is like very dangerous to me.
Yeah, you mark my words, this series will have a moment where a new type of item is introduced, an item that's beyond the known rankings. It will happen. There is no way it can't happen for very specific reasons that I'll explain when we finish doing the recap.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
So it turns out dragons can use magic to turn themselves into humans.
Pretty much, yeah, which I think is really cool, because they specifically say, yeah, some of the buildings in this old dragon building, the hallways, are some are dragon size, some are human size, and it's clear that the writer has actually put some thought into what the ramifications of actual dragons, shape-shifting dragons, would have to the world. It's not just, oh, they're dragons because, and we don't, but it's still a regular, normal world. No, the existence of dragons shaped at least part of the infrastructure of this world, which I think is, it's promising because it shows that the writer thinks about what he's doing. He doesn't just do and then ignore, you know? Mm. And so, again, sorry, I keep interrupting, but discussion. Carry on.
Anyways, Choma accompanies pretty much accompanies Jig around, you know, it was like just after they leave the building or something, and then Jig gets attacked by some hitman who can use telekinetic powers. He has a very odd name, Jakin Kawahada. I'm like, Jakin.
Yeah, the names get kind of weird in this series.
Yeah.
Don't expect me to remember them, ever.
I'm quite sure Jig is probably short for something, because I don't think they have names really Jig. Jig, I'd be surprised.
Maybe he's a dancer.
Let's get Jiggy. Okay, I'm just stop.
Anyways,
Jig gets attacked, and his MacGuffin activates, and Jocking's body, it even counters explosions, yeah, pretty much, and shoots a beam back at him, and then this wind attack that Choma does, just doing a guard. I was like, wait, you need a wind attack? What the heck? And it's kind of like this, you don't really see that many invisible type characters, main characters for that.
Well, especially not ones that clearly can't turn back to normal because he wears that mask because he can't see him. You know, nobody can see him otherwise. And I actually think was a really nice twist, because initially, just looking at the cover spread for this, or just sort of like, you know, the art at the beginning of the issue, I was kind of thinking, oh, hey, this maybe, well, we were both thinking it. We were thinking, oh, hey, the main character wears a mask. And it turns out, yes, the main character wears a mask, not the guy that we thought it was.
I thought the mask was just floating, and it was some sentient being that was going to go around the main... I was going to go around Jig and give him powers or something. I didn't see what was on his back.
Yeah, the mask is... Yeah, it turns out the mask isn't even important. It's just what the dude wears so people can see him, though. I don't know why. It is shown that his cell phone is invisible, so his clothes are invisible. But you have to wonder, why is the mask not invisible?
that's definitely something important.
Probably, maybe it turns out it's like a one of those heirloom items.
So. Oh yeah, Now I remember. Okay, so Jake basically goes to this building where the so-called exorcist is supposed to be that'll help him remove the curse. But then it turns out that Jackie was falling the whole time, and that's because apparently there was a tracking device put on Jake. And that tracking device was actually in the form of a charm that the director gave Jake, which pretty much where Jackie said, "Oh, you guess what? You know the director? Yeah, that guy is actually evil. He pretty much set you up the entire time." I'm like,
Yeah, okay. I wanna pause here for a second, because this is the part where I started worrying about this manga a little bit, because I called this very early on, like the moment we're introduced to. This director person saved his life by putting this these used things. Yeah, it's, you know, and I mean, again, this is hardly amazing deductive thinking on my part, because how often is it that we find out that in the first chapter of a manga, it turns out that that someone that was very important to the main character turns out to be evil all along. I mean, or someone that helped the main character turns out they had nefarious motives. It's so incredibly common that I'm almost, I don't know. It's kind of disappointing, but at the same time, it doesn't feel like it was.
Was it too soon to reveal?
No. I mean, it works just fine the way it is, but at the same time, it's very, how do I put this? It's not dwelt on, you know, focused on so much. You know, it's not like they're like, oh my gosh, this is such an incredibly shocking, horrible thing that I have discovered, because that would annoy the readers, because pretty much anyone could guess what was happening if they read enough manga. And so, yeah. But that was my first, my first moment where I partially felt smart, but at the same time I was like, look, if I can predict it, it wasn't that hard to predict.
I didn't predict it at all. I just thought it was suspicious.
Well, at least I have the consolation prize of that I know for a fact I am smarter than you.
Personally, I feel that they could have kept this like not, you know, revealed for a while. But then they would have gone the air gear route. I like how the twist in air gear route went.
Like that twist in air gear. I just hate everything else about that series. But I do think that this is, I mean, the fact that the director guy is evil is not the big point. But what is interesting is, like, unlike other series where you have the first chapter, there's this shocking, in quotation marks, reveal that this one person is evil, they're immediately taken out within the first chapter. The director, even though the assassin was taken out, the director is still around. So it's very likely that going after him might be a longer stretching plot point.
Unless it ends up being canceled, like in the Way of Barrage, how they went after Black at the very end.
Oh yeah, that is certainly possible. Oh yeah, there you go. Thank you for providing an actual example of exactly what I was talking about. But yeah, let's go ahead and finish up discussing what happens in the manga.
So the revelation that the so-called director was the one responsible for cursing him and for putting that thing on him and using him as a guinea pig and such caused Jake to go crazy and attempt and go on the offensive instead of the defensive and try and destroy the world or the city. And Chomo's like, I will not abandon him because he has lost hope. Yeah. He's trying to destroy the world. All I need to do.
Yeah, he jumps from I'm an innocent wide-eyed guy to I will kill everyone pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Though he does immediately, that is more meant to be the cursed gear thingy taking influence, because he does then immediately try to kill himself.
Cursed gear.
Wait. Where have I heard that before?
I'm not going to say, because it's more funny when you try and figure it out.
Oh, son of a bitch. Why? Why is that manga? shit. Okay.
Anyways.
Yes, carrying on.
So Choma helps him, and you know, pretty much just reassures them that, you know, even though you're gonna be doing some bad stuff, I'll still be there to help you out because that's what I can do. And I guess Choma, this person is kind of like noble in a way. Like,
yeah. I think mostly it's basically the idea is, you know, he's very much pro. He's proactive people.
Proactive.
Pretty much, yeah. Because he does say that it doesn't matter what your goal is. Having a goal is better than not having one. And I kind of get a feeling that the author is trying to make a statement against your typical otaku stereotype, where it's like, oh, you don't have any goals. Oh, you'd be better if you did have goals. And I'm like, what are you talking about? My goal is to collect all the waifus. That's a goal.
But you can't hold them physically.
Oh, just you wait. Virtual reality is coming. And then that won't be the only thing that's coming.
Hi-oh. Actually, I think it's more terrifying as a robot type, but okay.
I don't know, robot waifus.
Anyways.
Whatever, I'm flexible.
Anyways, so Jig manages to get stopped somehow, and Choma saves him. And then we get an interesting twist. You want
to
say it?
If by twist you want to say M. Night Shyamalan thought of this one on a bad day, then yes, that is exactly. Okay, turns out that... turns out that our friend is not an...
Troma Yabusame.
Yeah, Troma is not... Thank you. It turns out that our friend Troma is not an invisible man. He is, in fact, an invisible dragon. I just want to say this was the second point where the second thing that I called, because...
This was another thing I did not even catch. I was like, huh.
I was reading the manga, and I was like, huh, they sure are mentioning dragons a lot. And, oh, hey, look at this guy who we can't see what he looks like. And then suddenly it's like, oh, hey, look, you can see his outline. He looks human. But then you're like, oh, right, shape-shifting dragons.
You know what he should have been? Not a dragon.
That would have... I don't know. On the one hand, that would have been kind of disappointing as well. I mean, just because I can predict something doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. Because
I can predict it.
Yeah. Well, again...
I don't want to predict it. I just read it. I don't try and think too much about it. It's again, like how I watch Adventure Time, and I like it.
Again, refer to my insulting comment towards you about our respective levels of intelligence.
Whatever.
Yeah. I am such an asshole. Sorry.
Anyways.
Yes,
so...
But I do want to say that even though I called Dudes a Dragon, this last page is pretty badass.
Yeah.
I really like what we get to see of the design. Though part of it is, if I look at it in a certain way, I'm sort of thinking, like, dude looks like a chubby dragon. But still, I like the general wyvern kind of design is what it looks like. I see. He does have four legs. So it looks like we're going for a traditional Western dragon design, which is refreshingly different. I like it. Mo, go ahead and give your opinion while I let my spastic cat out of this room. I'll be right back.
The reveal was, I didn't catch this at all, generally, because, like I said, I don't read to predict, I just read to enjoy, unlike other people who I kind of do not approve of sometimes. I mean, I understand why, but I really don't approve of them, you know, reading something and just predicting, going, oh, yeah, I have feeling. You know, it's just... Come on now, no story's original, no story is going to be great all the way through. There's going to be some things, and so it's just the beginning.
No, I'm not saying I didn't like it. I'm just saying the two big twists were kind of bog standard and predictable. Doesn't mean it's going to be bad. I mean, remember...
But you never know. It could end up being something similar to how... World Trigger is a great first chapter.
The first chapter doesn't necessarily indicate the quality of the actual series, because remember, World Trigger had a great first chapter, I thought. The rest leading up to more recently was kind of boring to terrible. The Blue Exorcist had an awful, awful, horrendous first chapter, but the rest of the series is really good. It wasn't good.
Yeah, it wasn't that good, but I liked it.
I don't think, did we ever cover the first volume? I can't remember.
We did.
Yeah, we did. Okay. Yeah,
in that case. Pretty much point out how bad it was the first chapter.
Okay, good, as long as I did that. But still, I like what we've got here with this series. It's promising. It also, with a huge cover spread, color spread shows that, okay, yeah, we've got some characters here that we've got planned ahead. So I look forward to seeing what's what with all that.
I want to see the woman in that form. Ooh.
Yes.
Is she a demon or something?
No, I guess maybe kind of like an elf deal thingy.
Dark elf?
No, she didn't have dark skin.
Dark elf would probably look like more.
I think the one the tanned policeman was meant to be a dark elf.
Oh.
Anyway, well, that's that new chapter of. What's it called again?
Stealth Symphony. According to the name of that, it's actually a little play on that. Let me get to that. Actually.
Besides the fact that it's alliteration in English?
Yes. It's alliteration. Anyway, no on the title. The title of the series is rendered in the original Japanese as, I cannot read it. The first part is the kind of phonetic rendering for stealth. For the second part, the kanji for symphony is normally written as, I cannot read that, but it translates as mixed sound, song, and is usually pronounced Kyoku. But the creators of the series specifically chose to replace the middle character Kyo, the sound for reverberate, with the character Sakai, which is the character for boundary or border. This was probably done to represent the boundary between the two different worlds coming together, but we'll have to read more of the series to gain insight into its significance.
Do you see? Alright,
well. So there's a reason why the title is set up.
Okay. Yes, it will be interesting to see what happens with that. But overall, I think this is a promising start. I do think that the twists, again, in this first chapter were standard first chapter twists. But there's enough going on here that I think that I'll enjoy the rest of the series. We'll kind of have to see where it goes. The characters were well rendered overall. I didn't find any of them offensive in any way. Which, after reading some truly horrendous first chapters in my past...
I want to see that Mohawk Goblin dude in the collar spread. He looks interesting.
Let me take a look at that again. Mohawk Goblin dude. Where's he at? Oh, that guy. Dude, yeah, that guy looks
good. That guy.
Oh, and I'm looking at that one chick again, and yeah, she does look more demon-like than I thought. But, yeah, it's a... Yes, 'tis a colorful group. Also, I want to point out that the main character being invisible is an absolutely ingenious move for a color spread because you can have him right in the front and still be able to see all the other people in the color spread, except for the ones blocked by the mask, which it looks like there's some kind of night guy in the back there.
Yeah, I see him.
Yeah, and some kind of zombie giant with glasses. Interesting.
Glasses?
Yeah, way in the back, under the rainbow.
Under the rainbow.
Somewhere over the rainbow.
Oh, yeah, I see it. Some weird, yeah, eyeball or something.
It's like, you've come to the end of the rainbow, and oh my gosh, it's a giant demon zombie. That was me trying to be Irish, and I suck.
That is some cleavage, I gotta say.
Yes, of course you'd point that out.
Ooh, I want someone to see the lizard guy when he appears.
Yes, well, definitely an interestingly designed cast of characters. But it's time for us to move on, and we will next talk about One Piece, chapter 738.
All right, you take the floor on this one, man.
Yes, I shall. Trouble Army Special Officer Sugar. And starting off with Frankie building a miniature house for some hamsters. Which... Now I kind of want to see the One Piece and Hamtaro crossover.
Because apparently looking at when I saw the request, it's apparently from Anoda Skywalker from Osaka. I'm like, hey, this person submitted before. Get the other guys at camps.
Yeah, I know. It might have been a typo. Maybe they forgot to change the name. I don't know. But, yeah, we'll see when the volume comes out. We'll have to remember that. But anyway, talking about the actual chapter... It turns out that that guy,
Treble.
Oh yeah, I'm an idiot. Turns out that Treble has really great eyesight because he's a because
he hates flies.
Yeah, he's able to shoot one with his sticky thing and blow a huge hole in the wall. And right as Leo is about to go enact the plan, Robin stops him with her hands growing out of the ground. And I have to say, it's so weird seeing Robin just grow a head outside. Which, wait a minute, how's she doing that? She normally
can... 2 years of training, don't forget.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, not just that, but normally she has to see where she's growing her body part.
I guess as long as she's seen something before, she
or she's
like,
by a window or something. I don't know. Yeah, but yeah, we also discover we see where the sad, where the thingy. Oh, damn! Why did I forget that? Sorry, the smile factory. That's it. We see the smile factory where it is basically fruits that are being treated with sad, and they are creating the artificial devil fruits, and they are using the tontadas to grow them because the tontadas, as we remember, are very good with plants.
Except they aren't so. Except with the smile fruit, apparently it's very unnatural, so they can't really grow it as well.
Yeah. So and yes, so that's why they end up harvesting a bunch of, unripe fruit, which makes their slave driver basically very angry.
And say whip of love. I'm like, wait, that's just weird.
Yeah, but he kind of does. He's kind of doing this whole. Oh, hey, you people, like, I'm tricking you into thinking you're working willingly for us. We're using this to help your princess, and that is, in fact, a lie. But, yeah, we got cut back to Robin and the Tontadas and Usopp, where she reveals that Treble has incredibly good eyesight because he shot the fly right between the eyes, and it's too dangerous to go after Sugar while he is watching over her. Mm-hmm. And so they decide that what they're going to do is Robin is going tricks Treble into thinking that there is a problem down in the docks, and while she is gone, the Tontadas attack in force, and of course that doesn't work because all Sugar has to do is touch some of them, and she turns them into toys. And, of course, the Tontadas immediately forget their friends and end up fighting each other. And so things are looking not good at all. And Robin is quickly discovered when it turns out that there's a, Sugar tells Treble that there's a trap. And Robin tries to escape, but she's caught. But then it turns out that was actually just a clone of her. And she does manage to get away because, clone. But that doesn't sit well with Treble, who decides to rescue Sugar by throwing a battleship at her.
I will save you by throwing a battleship.
And it's like, no wonder people hate him. Not only is he sticky and annoying, but his interpretation of save is murder. And not murdering the
person
people
left
that
for
need
dead,
to be
trust
murdered.
Me.
Yeah, sure. Whatever.
No, seriously, you'll understand when that happens.
Fair enough. But, yeah, I do like... I don't know. I like this chapter. This was a good chapter. We're going to get to see more about what's going on, but at the same time, it didn't quite have that big moment that the really great One Piece chapters do.
Yeah. It was okay for chapter for me. I mean, I understand, although it was on break, but I mean, you just came back and said, okay, back to the pacing. Understood. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when Treble threw the battleship, I was like, dude, I think you got the wrong idea.
Yeah, you know what? What do you want to bet that this turns out to be what shocks Sugar so much that she falls unconscious and all the toys are released?
Oh, man, I'm not going to bet anything, but it'd be funny if it was.
Probably not, but at the same time, I mean, because that would be kind of anticlimactic, but it would also be really funny.
Well, probably she's like stunned by the whole throwing and like whatever, and all of a sudden Leo gets a Tabasco thing and just freaking stuffs in the face, or Usopp probably does it or something.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know. Yeah, the Tatababasco sauce ball will have to be used at some point. It would very much feel wrong if it isn't used after it's introduced like that. But then again, Oda is known to introduce items into his story and then not actually use them, such as the key that Luffy was going to use to free Ace, but then they made a wax copy. So, but yeah.
Is it done as a wax copy?
Indeed. All right, well, let's move on to the next series. Mo, it's time to talk about your favorite series in the world.
No, it is not. I hate it so much. I don't want to talk about why. Okay.
Yes,
chapter 665. The current me does not like this.
Well, okay. Just as a reminder, you don't have to go in as much detail about a chapter if you don't want to.
Okay. So okay, the chapter's title, The Current Me, and it's number 665. So next week we will have the so-called legendary chapter 666. Supposedly that's as long as Kishimoto doesn't go on break or, you know, get sick or something.
I don't know. To be fair, in Kishimoto's defense and Kubo's defense, well, not so much Kubo recently, but in Kishimoto's defense, he has not been one to take breaks very much. So,
and he doesn't do color spreads much.
But yeah, why is it that so often some of the hardest working ones are also the ones that have the biggest story problems? Just saying.
Mashima.
Mm-hmm.
But Mashima enjoys it.
He enjoys it, but he has his periodic story problems, you know? He
plays too many games. Get off the moe, man. Get off the moe.
He plays Monster Hunter. I don't see how anything about that is moe.
You have no idea how moe Monster Hunter can get sometimes.
I don't think I want to know.
You don't want to know?
No, not particularly.
Anyways, Obito manages to fight against the Black Death's takeover, and gets his body back, I guess.
More or less.
And then we go into some weird thing where Madara tells Obito that he was Madara, and Madara is not Madara because Obito is Madara, and I'm just like, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah, it's a lot of talking. And that's the biggest problem with Naruto recently, is that there is too much damn talking. Normally I like a wordy series, but at the same time, it's just, dude, this entire arc recently, the past year, has just been people talking about some false philosophical bullshit that isn't actually true in any way. I mean, for example, when Madara says chakra was meant to be a linking power, but people broke the links and only contained the physical and mental energies within themselves, and they were able to use this power to...
Good friendship, let's fight!
So they used it to amplify and greatly increase the volumes of one's chakra, so did someone... it's confusing. But yeah, they basically, because it gives them superpowers, they fight, and that's what causes all the war and hardship, and I understand that in this world, that can sort of work because, you know, people have superpowers and they only use them to fight. But at the same time, Madara's whole stance of, oh, you know, it's because people have chakra, this horrible, abominable power, that they fight. If they didn't have it, they would not fight. Except that's too obviously false. In any sense of the word, unless these are not actually humans in the series, it doesn't matter a damn bit if they have superpowers or not. Because let me tell you something, we do a plenty good job of murdering each other without superpowers. So okay. Taking chakra away would just mean they start using more swords. Suddenly Tenten becomes the greatest warrior in the world because she's the only one that's practiced weapons.
I want to read that series.
Actually, I do too. Fan fiction writers, get on that. No, but still, you know, I mean, there is always a sense of the villain's philosophy should not be right. But it's also poor writing for them to be so obviously wrong that anyone with any ounce of any kind of brain should know that this is just not the case. And I don't see how he is so thick as to not realize that this is not the damn case. You know?
Yeah, it felt like there was just too much freaking. You know? I'm like, okay, you know, I mean, if we just link them all together, we won't fight. But I'm like, you know what? You'd still fight even without the chakra.
Yeah, and
you'd still find ways to kill each other regardless, because I'm not going to go on because, you know, I really don't want to go on.
Yeah, well, the thing is that it's very likely that this is supposed to be a parallel to modern weapons and, you know, for example, nuclear bombs and, you know, just kind of like modern weapons that can kill a great deal of people at the same time. And if this is meant to be a parallel, and that is the point that Kishimoto is trying to make, it's doubly ridiculous, because I'm pretty sure living in Japan, you would know very well that people did not need bombs to wage war.
Not to mention that they freaking fantasized and popularized the Sengoku era so much.
Which was war, but to be fair, that's other Japanese people. That's not necessarily Kishimoto that does that. But I'm just saying, if he is doing this as a parallel to modern weapons of mass destruction, then the fact that he's trying to make a very obvious political statement is immediately undermined in the fact that he should know that is not that, well, ugh, sorry, the idea being that he is, it's the villain that's saying it. What am I saying? But, you know, the logical conclusion being, take away their bombs and then they will stop fighting. Except that's obviously not true. And I guess that is kind of the point that he'd be trying to make. I guess it's kind of hard to tell what he's trying to say exactly. But again, like I said, it's so obviously flawed that it's really hard to root for this villain in any sense of the word. There's no subtlety to it. It's just flat out, this is your philosophy, and it's so obviously wrong. A 5-year-old that has gotten into a schoolyard fight could tell you why you're wrong.
Funny. But yeah, okay, so during the whole talk no jutsu, Madara using on Obito, Kakashi, Gaara, and Minato decided to do some sort of a Three Stooges attack that almost succeeded, except it was kind of funny.
Except Madara is overpowered.
Madara manages to cut Minato's freaking hand off, and with the Rasengan that actually went into Kakashi, I'm like,
he's like, well, that's a, that's how very
there
convenient.
There goes my arm.
And wait a minute, how is he maintaining that without being attached to his arm anymore? Is it just that fast?
I guess it's that fast.
Yeah. Also, those fans of making fun of Sakura will be pleased to notice that she did jack shit.
Well, they're fighting some uber powerful dude that turned into some other dude that they don't know about.
Well, yes, but to be fair, if she were actually, if it weren't for the history of writing her as an ineffectual character, she wouldn't be in the position where she can't do anything. But in defense, she is kind of the thing that's keeping Naruto's heart beating.
She is his life support.
Yeah, and in this case, it's in a literal sense, not in a figurative romantic sense.
She is literally keeping alive. She started to find Madara because it'd be like, Naruto's dead. Oh, crap.
Yeah. And then apparently Obito decides to take a leaf out of Sakura's book and grabs Madara's heart, I assume, is what he's doing with his hand there. Like, probably not actually, but he does stab him with like a spear fist kind of deal. And he goes on about, oh, hey, I'm redeemed now. Because
I am Obito. Uchiha, I am not you. You are not me. I am not you. I am me. Oh, okay.
There's a lot of nonsensical talking. And of course, there's another reference to Rin. And I really just hope, like, in like an omake at the end of this series, Kakashi is talking to Obito and is like, So, I guess this probably wouldn't be a good time to mention how me and Rin lost our virginities to each other after you died the first time. No?
Wait, what?
Why are you... I'm making a joke.
I know.
Okay, but still, I'm kind of hoping, it's like, please let that happen, because that I would laugh so hard.
That'd be so cruel.
It would be cruel, but after how Obito has been kind of a worthless character, I wouldn't blame Kishimoto if he decided to do that.
He tries too hard for a dead girl.
Yeah, it's... No, but in general, this is... Yeah, this chapter, final verdict, too much talking. And there's been too much talking for a long, long time.
And there's still going to be too much talking until something happens.
And it wouldn't be so bad if it were actually talking about stuff that wasn't complete horse shit.
Yeah.
But anyway, carrying on, let's talk about One Punch Man, Chapter 33.
Hmm.
Where I love the moment where Saitama tries to open the door right at the very beginning, and he's like, oh, it broke. You just see the dude with the tentacle dude. He's like, what the crap? His reaction is brilliant. Okay, and then we also discover that the alien dude, turns out that he can keep regenerating himself on and on and on. And he
says, Garyugan Shoup. That's his name, I think. I know, I don't ask how I remember that.
How did you remember that? No, but he's saying, it's like, hey, I kind of can't leave here because these guys won't stop attacking. And, you know, so, hey, come down and help me so that I can, you know, come up. Otherwise, you know, I can't come help you against the intruder. But then turns out that metal bat dude discovers that there's a marble inside one of the heads. And he looks at it and he's like, huh, what's this doing in there? And when the monster alien guy, whose name I'm not going to remember, says give it back, Bat Guy smashes it. And the head melts. And it turns out, and everyone's like, oh, hey. He's like, he's got a weak spot. And they're saying, like, oh, hey, good job. We're just going to keep attacking it till we hit one. And, yeah, bad news for Mr. Marble Guy. And then we also go to several pages of that of a rendition of that one maze. You remember? I think it mentioned it on Crunchyroll a while back. This was or something. I don't think Crunchyroll mentioned it, but it was mentioned that this was basically a maze that this janitor in Japan spent years drawing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because if you notice on, let's see, where was it? Is it zooming in real close there into Saitama? Where is it? Where did it go? Okay, yeah, there's a note that says, the giant labyrinth in the spaceship appears with the consent of its creator, Kazuo Nomura.
Oh, yeah. Which, I looked it up, like...
Yeah, that's...
I was like, wait, who?
Yeah, that's pretty cool, the way they use that and incorporate that. At first, before I had that moment of, wait a minute, this looks familiar, and then I see the name of who actually created it, I was like, all right, that guy. At first, I was thinking that the artist for the series had actually drawn this himself, and I'm like, dude, this guy's a masochist. But, dang, that maze, that's insane. I wonder if it can actually
be... See, I looked up Kazuo Nomura, and he seems to be some Aikido master. I don't know which one.
I don't know if that's the right one, but I'm pretty sure this was the one that was drawn by the janitor. But anyway.
Yeah, there
you go. Yeah, so, yeah, this was something, I'll say. But, oh man, that maze, it's insane. But I do like the way they use that to just show how hopelessly lost Saitama is.
Oh, yeah, I see it now.
Yeah, and I love how, And I love where Saitama is basically like, hey, I'm lost. And the guy's like, fine, I'll guide you out. And then he's like, okay, go to the right. And he's like, okay, I'll go to the left. He's like, no, stop, darn you. Hey, no. And if anyone that's played Diablo 3 knows that Diablo is basically busy taunting you the entire last act, going on is like, oh, I will defeat you. Ha ha ha. And in my mind, I think that he's actually, every time he's not taunting the player, he's actually sort of sitting in his hiding place going like, crap, 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 they're coming, oh, shit. And that's kind of basically what this one dude is doing, exactly what I was thinking of Diablo. And he bashes in, Saitama bashes in the door and confronts Cyclops dude, whatever his name is. And then we also get a really amazing drawing of the tentacle squid alien with just the, oh my gosh, the way that, just using black and gray and lights, it's amazing.
I think I got the names mixed up. The marble dude is Melzargard, and one that you're just talking about is Garyugan Shu.
Right, that guy. Yeah, but yeah, his introductory panel is just phenomenal. If it weren't for the fact that the characters' faces are drawn so cartoonishly, it's kind of silly, but just the, oh my, I mean, this manga, it is art. It is art porn. No, wait, oh, no, that's what? Hentai. Sorry. I meant it in the terms of what food porn is, where it's just pictures of really good looking food.
It will never work unless it's food porn. I'll say that much. And scenery.
That's it. There we go. Background porn. That's what it is. Because I mean, just the way that he managed to do light while using only shadows and, you know, black and white and tones of gray. It's amazing. I just, this series and art, stupendous. And yeah, turns out that Squid Man is telepathic, or telekinetic, I mean.
The most powerful telekinetic in the world.
Yeah, three guesses how he's gonna be finished off.
He's gonna get punched
in the balls somehow, even though he doesn't appear to have them.
Or get his neck twisted if he has a neck somewhere.
Yeah, well, we shall see. But yeah, this was a great chapter. I mean, just the fact that the plot's moving forward, we're finding out that, oh, hey, these aliens actually do have a weakness, but at the same, and also just the amazing art and the use of that labyrinth was a lot of fun. So, kudos. Me like.
All right, next, the next chapter is All You Need Is Kill, Chapter 6, Road.
Also known as KG Almost Gets Some, but apparently he is suffering from romantic drama lead syndrome.
Romantic drama unrequited love lead syndrome. Yeah.
Pretty much.
So we find out the actual reason why KG looks so bad, because in the previous loop, as we should have expected, he saw the Sarge get killed. Rather, he got the Sarge killed, and so we're trying to do some sort of grandstand. I'm going to kick your... No, Sarge's like, no.
Yeah, well, it's more the whole, you know, he's feeling guilty because he was, you know, he was trying to use a weapon that he could not actually handle, and so that got the Sarge killed. But at the same time, you're sort of like, wait, why would that... You feel guilty about that? The dude's alive again, so what the heck? But
he might die again. That's the thing, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, and then he and Rachel talk, and Rachel's like, okay, you know, it's your last day before you move out, right? And then she, like, offers to give him one night stand. I'm like, and then he turned it down. I'm like,
you're like, dude, seriously? You think this would be at the forefront of your mind right now? I'm just saying.
But, I have to admit, he has a good reason. He says, I'm not the guy you're looking for. I'm like, wait, if you're using a Jedi mind trick?
Is that good? Reverse psychology. No, but here's where it gets even more confusing. I mean, it turns out that she looks a bit like this girl that he had a crush on in high school. He had a broken heart, and is like, oh, that has nothing to do with me applying to the defense force. But yeah, at the same time, I'm just kind of thinking, okay, so he's moping over a lost love kind of deal. But at the same time, you have to wonder, most guys, when confronted by a willing woman who looks somewhat like the girl that they had a crush on, only she has bigger breasts, would not think twice. Then again, maybe KG is as disgusted with poor kitchen sanitation and clothing as I am.
Oh, that's funny.
Now, if only the audience reacted the same way, I'd be a comedy legend.
So he makes that connection that, oh yeah, this whole crush and my lesbians have no connection. And then he says that and then he remembers this whole thing that his crush talked about. I don't know if he even talked to her anything at the time or whatever, but it seems to be in her words. So she says, if you only live one life, then make it count. And then he says, well, I don't live one life, so I don't have to make this one night stand thing count. It's something else. Okay?
Yeah. Although, yeah, it also is kind of confusing, where it's like, if life really was a one-time thing for me, I too may have made the decision to spend it with Rachel, which is sort of like, so the fact that he has multiple chances to get with the hot chick is turning him... is less appealing than having only a single... What?
Dude, I think the dude wants to conserve his energy so he doesn't get killed.
Well, there is that.
But... and then when he actually lives, he'll probably go back and say, okay,
also,
let's get on.
Yeah. Also, I might think that he probably has a thing for the Sarge. Let's be honest here. I mean, where does he immediately go after turning down the hot, big-breasted woman? He goes where the sweaty, shirtless, muscly Sarge is lifting heavy weights.
In the Navy. Wait, that's not the right one.
No, but it's close enough. But, yeah. So, and then... sorry, I'm not recapping this one. You go.
Okay, I'll finish it up. So, it turns out that after every 50 loops, he started getting migraines. And then, of course, he's already passed his 100-something loop. Where his migraines are getting worse. And by his 158th loop, it seems he's learned to... deal with it. It's like, oh, you know what? It's just gonna happen. I mean,
his migraines couldn't possibly have something to do with repeatedly having massive spikes shoved through his head.
Possibly.
I'm just saying. Yeah, and yeah. So it turns out you get towards. Yeah, he does really well in like the 154th loop, but you know.
His migraine gets him.
Yeah, I guess he says he doesn't think he died, but he was still caught in the loop, so I guess he passing out can do that as well. And it's so weird looking at his, looking at the arm that's outside of the armor, because on the one hand, it looks like it's been completely stripped of meat. But at the same time, it could just be the size difference between the armor and his actual body. Because you look at how much shorter it is than the armor, which, wait, that doesn't match up. The way it looks, it looks like his arm is long enough that the... that's just drawn really weird. I'm not sure about that perspective. But, yeah, it looks the way the arm looks like his forearm... is right where the elbow joint in the armor is, which I'm thinking that seems like a pretty massive design flaw right there. Yeah, I'm almost thinking, you know what, if you're going to do battle armor like that, you should probably have the entire arm be in the upper arm of the suit of armor, you know? But, or something, I don't know, I'm not a designer. But, yeah, turns out he's a badass by loop 158. Which, okay, yeah. Good chapter. I liked it. Even if his not having sex with giant, big-breasted women policy is a bit peculiar.
Probably share the same policy as you do.
Yeah, well, last time I checked, he's not religious.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. But, yeah. Still, I liked it.
I still think his reason is because, you know, he doesn't want to be too exhausted after the night.
Yeah, I don't think that's the idea because, you know, that's not what's mentioned. Other reasons are given, so I don't think that idea is supported simply by the fact that it is not mentioned at all in the chapter.
All right. I'm still in standby.
Feel free. Yeah, but still. Yeah, I really do like how you kind of get to see how he's become more and more badass throughout, and how he kind of goes back and basically becomes a complete scrub again, but then it takes like 158 loops for him to finally get the hang.
And Doug will probably give him a read instead.
Yeah. And so I imagine that, yeah, there will probably be some more development with Rita come next chapter.
And that one girl with the Shasta.
Oh, yeah, her too. We'll see what happens.
Three
But
girls. It sounds like a dating sim type of game.
I know that's the one thing that I was thinking is like, why does it look like we've got the dating sim stereotypes in the middle of this badass
Got the
sci-fi
main character,
series?
three girls, some guys.
Yeah, forget the guys. But all right then.
Must be equal to the women.
Yeah, sure. And let's talk about Toriko, chapter 267, Birth Cry of Hope, where that what appears to be a nitro doesn't do anything. All right, fair enough. But
You sit there like, hey, don't you forget someone?
yeah.
No.
And then we discover that the last ingredient is an egg of a billion bird, which it's a bird that its only defense mechanism is to lay more eggs and hatch an insane amount of offspring in the hopes that whatever eats them eats enough and it of its offspring and it manages to get away alive. I just want to say that I think we've just found a competitor for worst parent in manga, just edging out Gendo Ikari.
Wow.
Just saying. At least get one. At least Gendo only tried to throw one of his offspring to its his death, unless of course you count Rei, which, well, less his offspring, more a direct copy of his wife. Except she's a
You're
little
starving.
different, and then at the same time, you just have to say, please, brain, stop drawing that line of thought to its obvious conclusion. What were you talking about?
Become a Torgo, please.
Right, yes. So, yes, no weird, freaky sex in Toriko,
So
thank you.
yes, so the billion bird, apparently despite being the so-called billion bird, apparently it tastes disgusting.
Yeah, it's that's kind of the and that's one of the
Tastes
reasons why
terrible.
it's extinct is because animals started to learn, you know what, this thing is nasty and it didn't have to defend itself, so it stopped breeding. Which, interestingly enough, it can hatch hatchlings from unfertilized eggs, but I'm just gonna go out on a limb and think that Shimabukuro didn't bother doing too much study into biology before writing this series. Just saying. And well, we find out that the reason that the full course menu meal for Ichiryu would feed so many people is because all the ingredients are what's required to hatch the billion bird, and they spend the chapter hatching it. Although, of notable fact is that apparently Rin doesn't bother coming to see where her fiance is. A bit odd, but I was kind of expecting that after last week's chapter. It's like, okay, yeah, they're going to get engaged and then she's going to disappear for a while, isn't she?
Yeah.
But yeah, and then the bird hatches and they have to basically help it mature in some really weird roundabout ways where they like make it. Yeah, they give it like Zamitarashi kelp to help the chick grow large and then to help it. Yeah, to, I guess. Let's see. Yeah, to help it mature fully, it has to feed the dry melon to this
Nothing bug.
yeah the
Who
larva
turns
of the
to
nothing bug, who turns into an adult nothing bug, and then the billion
eat as
bird.
soon as possible becomes an animal.
Yeah, and then the billion bird eats it, and its head thing grows larger, signifying that it is sexually mature and.
Except Sunny's like, that's still ugly.
Yeah, but let's not draw the conclusions between the thing on its head growing larger and sexual maturity.
Sunny still believes it's ugly regardless. And I
Yes,
don't mean
you did
that.
mention that.
I mean the billion bird as a whole.
Yeah. And then Toriko scares the billion bird, and suddenly they have all the birds and all the hatchlings. And never-ending food, which I'm also kind of thinking, you know, okay, if the bird tastes so nasty, why not try just eating the egg? I guess it
Except
hatches too fast, but
the re except they have the backup is that they're gonna use all the chefs they have at the moment. So all the ones I gather at the Cultivate 17 cores
Yeah.
to make it taste really good despite how bad it really tastes.
Yeah, it is very much what we get in where the basic, the main goal of the future arc is, of the current arc, is going to be, hey, we're going to, where's my desktop computer keep turning on? The main goal is going to be, hey, we will find some way to make this meat something delicious. Though I have to say, I bet that most people, after eating all those pills, would be like, I don't care how it tastes, it's actual food. But also worth noting, we again get to see that Komatsu's nose actually does look different now. It looks more like a typical anime nose and not like his giant nostril abomination that he had before. So, yeah, it was a good chapter. I mean, it sort of was a bit that typical Shimabukuro, oh, hey, look, here you do these roundabout things to accomplish this task that he's so fond of. But,
yeah.
I like it. I like
it was it. A funny chapter, personally, because the Sonic one, it's too ugly. Like, I agree.
Yeah, and it also gives us the thrust for the future chapters, but...
Oh, wait. Did you actually cover the part about Midora?
Oh, yeah, that was... Turns out that when Toriko got there, the reason that we didn't get a huge rescue arc was because everyone was gone except for Midora.
There's no need for rescue arc. Like, yeah. So what you pretty think is like, oh, just Toriko's talking and going, hey, I'm here to save Mark. Oh, yeah. Okay, take it.
Pretty much that's what happened.
Where's everybody?
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to Bleach Chapter 569. Mo, take it away.
The White Haze. Okay, so Byakuya appears, and he actually doesn't do anything except just pretty much provide Rukia with cheerleader support, I guess.
Yeah, and also reveal that his Shikai is now about as powerful as his Bankai, essentially.
And his reason, and to back up his reason to why he says that, he says, I'm losing his Bankai allowed him to focus more on his Shikai, because when he had his Bankai, all he was focusing was his Bankai. Mm. So he was able to connect more with his Shikai when his Bankai was out of the way.
Mm. Yeah, I also want...
To kind of explain why it worked for Sword Swan and just about every other captain.
Yeah, I also want to say that our Quincy's release, or whatever you want to call it, is freaking metal. Because it's a giant, deformed, monstrous version of himself with his body hanging out of the mouth.
That was terrifying.
Yeah, also it is time... It is time for our German lesson of the week. Now, I would like to point out that I have heard a lot of people refer to this Quincy as Osnot, which is in fact incorrect. Now, as I'm sure many of you know, in many other languages, not English, but a lot of other languages, there exist certain things called accents that change the way the letter is pronounced. Most commonly, French is... notorious for this by having several accents that can be having like three different accents that can all be put on different, all these different letters. I know that Scandinavian languages, they don't necessarily have accents, but they have certain specific letters that are set apart from the actual, you know, from the alphabet. German just has what they refer to as the umlaut. And essentially what that is the two dots above vowels. In this case, we have the name Osnot, which again is the improper pronunciation, as there is an umlaut over the A and the O. Now, to explain the A a little bit in a way that you may more closely understand, in German, A is pronounced A, and with the umlaut, it is pronounced eh. So, for example, in German, the word hunt is jagd. That does not have an umlaut. However, the German word for hunter does have an umlaut, and it is pronounced jäge. So, the A is not pronounced a. It is, in fact, properly pronounced as eh. So, the first name for our dear friend here is es. And then the O. I don't have any good example of this one. Is you have the O, which is pronounced O in German, and with the umlaut, it is pronounced Ö. an example again of this being the German word for Easter is Oster. No, wait, no, that's not right. I'm an idiot. No. Oh, shit, I forgot the word for Easter. Let's see. Oh, and okay, no, okay, yeah, here's a good one. The word for, the German word for without is ohne, O-H-N-E, ohne, without an umlaut. Now, the German word for Austria is spelled with an umlaut in front of, with an umlaut O in front of the word. It is pronounced Österreich. So O with an umlaut is Ö. So the last name would be pronounced Nöd.
So S Nöd.
Exactly. The name that so many people are pronouncing as Nöd, which I would say would be a better name, is actually supposed to be pronounced S Nöd. S Nöd.
S Nöd. Something with German feeling.
Yeah. Accents matter. Do not throw accents above words to make them look German without actually knowing what they do to the letter.
So, Uber is...
Yeah, because unless he specifically wanted this dude's name to be S. Nerd, which I don't think he meant because it sounds very stereotypically German, and even though these guys are meant to be German, that is one of the goofier sounding bunches of letters that the German language has.
Why is one of them like there? But what has such a weird Indianish name, and the other is Chinese, and the other is a friggin' Mexican luchador wrestler?
Because Kubo is schizophrenic. I don't know. But this is clearly a German name because it uses German letters, in that it uses the German umlaut, and they actually mean something. Don't, I mean, dude, people, stop, but. Look, we need to, I don't know how Kubo thinks it's meant to be pronounced, but in future, anyone that's pronouncing it, calling him Asnot is not an option. His name is Asnot. And I swear that sounds like such a Bavarian thing to say. I tell you what. Nobody got that except for my German buddies. Represent. Anyway, where was I? No, wait, where were you? This is your chapter. Sorry, I just had to make sure that was very clear, because this guy is the most metal-looking of all the Sternritter, and he has the dumbest name. No, dumber than... dumber than... whatchamacallit? The dude with...
Mask the...
No, his was badass. What's his face? The dude with fire.
Oh. Baz B or something.
Yeah, no. This name is dumber. Just remember, S Newt. S Newt.
Sounds like as nude.
Yeah. Just remember that as you are looking at that bad at. Ugh, man, switching between languages. As you are looking at that badass, image of his body hanging from the giant body. Just remember, his name is S. Nerd.
Well, speaking of that badass image, so after Yakuya pretty much reveals that she doesn't have any reason to be afraid, she unleashes her
bankai. Which I'm kind of curious to see what this will do, how this will compare to, how this will compare to, say, what's his face? Popular guy, Hitsugaya's Bankai, since they both have ice. I'm actually really curious. I mean, granted, Rukia developing a Bankai was not exactly at the top of my list of things I want to see out of Bleach. But at the same time, I am moderately curious. It looks like there will be a lot of ice. So.
It's nice.
Yeah. The ice. Ice is nice. The Iceman cometh. Ice. What killed the dinosaurs?
Okay.
The Ice Age.
No more rhyming.
Sorry.
Okay, so that's me. It was an overall decent chapter. It
was all right.
It was kind of dumb, like saying, "Oh, I'm gonna steal his father." He's like, Basically, when he was, you can't find him, and he was like, nah, chill by you.
Yeah, that was kind of, it is kind of nice to see that Rukia is actually going to be the one to finish, because I would have been disappointed if Byakuya had finished it, because it would have very much been a, oh hey, yeah, Rukia is worthless as a character, she can't even fight her own fights. So that is nice. But at the same time, anytime anyone is rereading these parts of the series, just remember, S-Nut. S-Nut.
This feels like one of those KPBS shows where, like, they have a little kid show, and then all of a sudden, they bring into some sort of segment where they try and teach the kids how to say the words and stuff. I'm like, what the heck is this?
It had to be said. It was being mispronounced, and I had to reveal the utter absolute ridiculousness of what Kubo actually wrote.
And
or maybe it wasn't even him. Maybe it was the translators in Viz that don't know how language works.
Yeah, so the sad part about this is, we know about Evok's whole getting his power back. And so when S-Nut dies, he'll become stronger and Rukia's victory will often become pointless.
Pretty much that is kind of the basic idea of, hey, every time you win, this is actually a bad thing because the main guy is going to be badass now. More so than he was.
I can see. I can hear now.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone.
I can see
all obstacles in my way. It's going to be a bright, be a bright, sunshiny day. No, but that is actually kind of relevant, considering that the rain was a very strong motif throughout the first couple volumes of Bleach. I'm trying to think this is a better manga than it actually is.
I'm actually reading through the third volume of Bleach right now.
Yes.
And this is the volume that the rain comes in the most.
The rain came down and the flood went up.
Beast Boy, please.
Sorry. Okay, yes. Chapter 111, Head Over Heels. It's another Tsugumi chapter, and it seems like this is going to be an ongoing thing where Tsugumi finds something in the mansion and it turns out to be something you should not ingest. Except this time, she's learned her lesson. Only it's Paula. Only it's Paula that's being an idiot and doesn't listen. And she ends up eating one, and then she sees... Oh, my brain. All I can hear in my...
Tsugumi.
Yeah, all I can hear in my mind anytime I try to think of anyone's name is S-Nut. So S-Nut takes one of the candies, and then he sees S-Nut and falls head over heels in love with her. But then S-Nut discovers that, oh, you took that candy that I told you not to. And she discovers the instructions that say that anyone that eats it will fall in love with the first person that they see. And then she tries to keep people from eating it, but then S-Nut shows up and asks if she can have one. And then she eats it, and okay, I'm going to stop that. It's actually Chitoge that shows up and eats one of the candies, and she falls in love with Tsugumi. And then my favorite part of the chapter was Marika, where she tries one, and instantly it takes over her, and she's just...
Like, oh my goodness, the queer sensation has overcome me. Like, no.
Oh, hey, good choice of words, all things considered. And he's like, Tsugumi, dearest. He's like, ah, what am I saying? A devil and an angel within me are raging a ferocious battle. She's totally fighting that. That is how obsessed she is with Raku. It's both terrifying and endearing at the same time. And then Onodera eats one of them. And
at first, it seems like, oh, she's just, she seems normal. But then she's actually probably the most dangerous.
Yeah, it turns out she's got serious bedroom eyes and is invading personal space in a very, very, very... R-rated way, almost.
My story is going to be written on this.
Yeah, and then Raku... Oh, jeez, yeah. Then Raku almost eats one, but Tsugumi, clearly having had enough, takes it away from him and accidentally swallows it when Chitoge tackles her. And she runs. And then she hides and...
She runs and bumps and crashes into a wall.
Yeah, and sometimes... not too long after that, Raku shows up and she tries to get away. And she's like, no, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? Oh, what is this? And he carries her to the nurse's office where she's like, oh, I can't help it. It is the drug that is doing it to me. And then she gets a message from Claude saying, oh, hey, yeah, this, I'm going to throw it out. The effects only last 10 minutes, so they aren't very useful. And they absolutely do not last more than 10 minutes, just as a, just to point that out in case this will turn, reveal something you didn't want to know about yourself. And she, Tsugumi, realizes that it's been longer than 10 minutes, and she still had those feelings, and she's just like, oh no, and beats him up, or actually blows him up. But, yeah, I really love, I'm so glad that we went from so many Haru chapters to a Tsugumi chapter.
Actually, like a Tsugumi chapter that's actually like this one.
Yeah, well, this is, I mean, we've gotten similar chapters to this before. It does feel a bit formulaic for Tsugumi to be the one that this is always about. But at the same time, so far, every single incarnation of this has been a lot of fun. So, yeah, I love this chapter. It was hilarious.
I love it too. I think Margo's is probably the best one in this. And then Onodera and then Margo, because Onodera's good.
Yeah, that was... oh, dear. Onodera. Oh, my.
You have to bag that, Raku. You have to bag that. Anyways.
You're awful. She's a teenager. No, but...
They're the same age, anyways.
Well, yeah, but you're not. Freak. All right, time to move on. It's your turn.
Belzebub. Oh, I forgot to open.
Shit. Mm. Okay, which one should we go into now? We've got
Assassination Classroom.
All right, which chapter are you talking about?
Takebayashi time.
Oh, yes. It's time for that character we never noticed before.
Okay, this chapter has become interesting. Poro Sensei goes black.
And he doesn't come back. Thank you for that setup.
Okay. So Takebayashi is an otaku and
Oh gee, you don't say.
I didn't catch that for the most part. And when he entered the Class A classroom that he wanted to be a part of so much. It was the second semester, and the funny thing with the teacher was, he noticed how the teacher was first of all.
Kind of worthless.
No. First of all, the students, as he thought that he looked like, oh no, he doesn't understand that he's being left behind, and it turned out that he was like, oh wait, we actually studied this in the first semester. I'm like, oh my goodness, Poro Sensei, you're a genius.
Yeah, it is very much this whole, I already learned this, and your teaching style is worthless, you...
The teacher was terrible.
Yeah, it's very much showing that, okay, yeah, these guys are at the top of the school, but at the same time, no thanks to the teacher. It's entirely because these students study so hard and they could do so much better if the teacher or the teaching style weren't such a complete waste of time. And it's the introduction of this, seeing how the teachers actually teach in the school under the chairman, lets us get a direct clash between ideals, namely the chairman who has been, going on about this, only the strong survive, always force them into tough situations and they will thrive kind of deal, while others, the weak, fall by the wayside, and as opposed to Kuro Sensei's, who is very much the proper, shall we say it, method of teaching, of encouraging and cultivating the talents of his specific students and
every
working individually
with
them.
Every single one of the students, not just... specific, every single one. Granted,
this is not necessarily possible in a situation where there are way more students and the teacher is not supernatural in any way. But still, it's definitely a step in the better direction as opposed to what the school is doing for its top class. But anyway, carry
it's
on.
It's kind of funny because when I saw the Class A teacher team, I was like, hey, that's kind of like the class I'm in. Like, wait, what?
Uh-oh, you're in a crappy class.
Except this class is free, so it's okay. And the teacher, he has to know what he's doing. He just, in a sense, he is doing the whole screening now thing, but he knows what he's doing. He's doing what he can to keep the screen that you want to stay in and learn it.
Right.
Don't understand, just leave and, comes back some other time, or do something else.
Right.
But yeah, so he's really good teacher, I would say. That's why my dad took me over to see him anyway. Anyways, so when I talk about Yasi, kind of remembers how Koro-sensei taught him to learn through bonds of anime and tone-deaf singing. I'm like, wait, what?
That's my kind of learning.
No, it was not my kind of learning at all.
Yeah, well,
tone-deaf singing, at least.
Yeah, that part I could do without.
Yeah, he was from me saying the tone-deaf singing is so hard to learn that when I learned it, it was a lot things were a lot easier. I'm like, oh, that's true.
Yeah, it's very much he's kind of doing the whole, hey, here, I'll do this so that you actually remember it kind of thing. So, yeah, carry on.
And then Terasaga meets up with Takebayashi at a maid cafe, and then
he
gets a glimpse of maid Koro-sensei. Okay. I'm going to have nightmares after seeing that.
I've already erased it from my memory. What are you talking about?
By his notes.
Yeah, I would rather remember that than this weird thing you're talking about.
So despite Takebayashi leaving Class E continues to watch over him. And then Takebayashi gets called over by Asano, that's his first name, Gakushu, to the chairman's office, and then obviously being called to the chairman's office after leaving Class E can only mean bad things. And the chairman pretty much the way that the chapter ended.
Yeah, he wants to manipulate him into serving his very specific purpose. So, what?
Centipede.
Yes, that imagery again. And so, yeah, this was a pretty good chapter. I mean, we get some really interesting ideas, namely the whole, what is the best way to teach people and all that fun stuff. But, yeah. Overall, I do have to say, I'd say I'm a fan of this chapter. I like it much.
Indeed. I can tell it's going to get a little better next chapter.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week because the release schedule is weird. Yeah. All right, it's time for us to talk about Shokugeki no Soma. Which chapter did we cover last time?
We covered only 57, remember?
Right. So we need to cover 50. Hey, son of this is...
I know.
Stupid release schedule.
I told you we should have covered 58, but you said no.
Well, yeah. To be fair, I mean, if it starts turning out that it is going to be more consistent, we'll do two chapters 1 week and then go from there. But anyway, wait. Are we sure we didn't do this? Because this is the one 58 is with, what's his face? The dude with the spices. Yeah.
Didn't we? Wait, we did?
I'm pretty sure we did. I mean, it's
Ayama
Akira with the did we? It Don't he has a naan lid. He does his curry, and it's a it has a naan lid, which naan being the Indian kind of style bread. And
I could have sworn we only just covered the Megumi bit.
You're right. I think you're right. Yeah, we didn't. Now that I look at this, I'm thinking, we didn't cover this. But yeah, they break open the crust of bread, and it releases the explosive aroma. And that's the big appeal of it, is just this whole, just that moment of where the aroma wafts over you and overpowers you. Yeah, and there's a lot of...
Food, I will only eat food at best if it smells really good. Well, the taste, and probably a second thing, if it smells really good, I will eat it. If it smells really bad, I'm not going to eat it if it tastes really
good. Well, I mean, come on, dude, smell. That's how we know whether something's good to eat.
In the case of Sadatsuka now.
Well, do keep in mind she's losing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but then you find out that they use holy basil, which it's a spice sacred in South Asia, and it's really good basil, apparently. And they have it cultivated year-round in their special cultivation area. And so it's like, oh, hey, the person that's in charge of spices and herbs is cultivating a really rare, expensive herb. You don't say. People, why are people surprised by this? But, Yeah, and they also, basically, I mean, the chapter does a lot of explaining, this is how we did this. And there's more of that one woman trying to say, hey, you should become mine, because she
likes... Become mine.
Yeah.
Don't.
Yeah. Crazy. And I don't know, if I were in his place, I'd be like, okay, I'll do it. It's like 200 million annual salary, and my boss is a hot blonde bombshell. Okay, I'll work for you. I should have gone to culinary school.
Yeah, I should have gone to.
I still have the chance. I could do it. Except I don't feel like paying for something I already do it for free. But anyway, he gets first place. Isn't these past few chapters have been kind of weird to talk about because they're really, really awesome, but at the same time, it's kind of, well, yeah, but it's kind of the same format every week. Where
the only thing is, he scored a point lower than Alice. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, that was, it's like, oh, wow. It's interesting.
He's a master of curry.
And yet he did worse. Well, I guess that just goes to show how good Alice is. And then we end the chapter with Soma's. Oh, geez, sorry. Hiccups. Mm.
Akiri, Irina, Ishiki, and the Polestar Doormaster Lady are watching Soma get ready to step in.
Yeah, and Soma brings out his curry, which is an omelette. And he's like, this is the second aroma bomb.
He's like,
And he opens it up, and inside there is a risotto, a curry risotto. And it's like,
split it open, and it exploded everything.
And I'm kind of thinking, it's like, ooh, I want to make that. That looks good. But yeah, a curry and omelet with curry risotto, with a curry risotto on the inside. That looks tasty.
And just in the next chapter.
We'll talk about that next week. But yeah, this was a great chapter. A lot of fun. I mean, the chapters have been really good, even if they are a bit repetitive and hard to talk about. Because it's like, this person introduces their food, they get a high score. Higher than the last person's. That's basically what's going on here. So, alright, it's time for us to talk about the Kodansha chapters, starting with Fairy Tale, chapter 372. Hopefully they have all the pages uploaded. Crunchyroll.
Yeah, that was weird.
Alright, Mo, it's your turn.
Okay, so, Erza is pretty much like...
I'm gonna torture you now, bitch. Basically.
Yeah. Because Kyoto is unbound now with the change, but what she doesn't realize is that, they only look for magic, not curses. Anyways, turns out the demon...
Freaking loophole.
Yeah. Anyways, Erza gets news that Gerardo Pig would, whatever. Anyways, the demon's real goal is to eliminate all magic so they can reunite with Zara.
Pretty much, yeah. So,
and then we get to see the fairy tale, the other fairies I remember fighting in. That was a bit with Yubisha.
That was amusing, and at the same time, dude, Mashima, what is your goal with them? Because Gray looks pretty mortified there.
I think he's trying to show how beautiful the beauty is. I mean, you know how Rin was to Torgo, right?
Well, yes, except Gray has flat out said, dude, you're weird around me. I don't want. But I don't know. Honestly, if I had a hot girl that was obsessed with defending me and wasn't a creepy stalker, because Juvia may have been a stalker at first, but she wasn't a flat out stalker because she actually came and approached him. In the way that people actually start talking to each other.
Unless he did kind of join the guild that he was a part of.
Oh, yeah, but still, hot girl that's obsessed with me, I would not say no. Unless I had an even hotter girl that I was interested in, but, okay. Yeah, so, right, it's still your turn. Keep discussing.
Yeah, we get this one part where Macau is saying, so why did you bring Lactus and Raijinshu? I'm like, dude, you want to leave them there to die?
And that's basically what Kana says. Dude, they would have been blown up. And, yeah, so it turns out, I kind of like how it turns out that they're at the very bottom. Like, how are we supposed to get to the top?
We run.
Yeah. It's sort of like, oh man, that must be so trippy. You're just like, I don't know how this is supposed to work.
Gravity.
Yeah. Anyway. Mm.
So yeah, but, well, apparently they find a way, because apparently after when Urza fights Kyoka, she freaking bored a freaking hole straight through the cube.
Yeah. And yeah, using a lance, by the way, which is pretty badass. And I like this suit of armor. It's really, it looks more like actual armor than anything she's ever worn, really. And it is really a really cool lance. Well, it's kind of a ridiculous looking lance, to be honest, but it's still pretty cool.
And then, okay, and then Natsu and Lisanna go their separate ways, and Lisanna goes to save Mira Jane. Not that she needs any help anyway, it'll be funny when
you see that. And he's like, I could use some help finding some clothes, please.
And then Natsu runs to the weird enemies, he fights them, and then all of a sudden they freeze or something, and then all of a sudden, guess what? Zaren.
Of course he's going to be there. But yeah, I'll be interested to see how, you know, how exactly Zaref, you know, relates to his demons. Since, you know, they seem pretty evil, but at the same time, they're kind of like, yeah, we're evil, but at the same time, this is how we were created. We're just trying to get back to our...
Zaref has a thing for lesbian demons or something?
Why not?
Why not?
No, but yeah, I like this chapter. It was good. I mean, granted, it is does seem like it's going.
And my kind of gets bonus points for being like, why do you bring a bomb? You know, they're gonna die, right?
Yeah, I do feel that it is Fairy Tail is going its typical route of the easy resolution, where oh look how terrible everything is, but now we're out and we are going to kick ass because we are Fairy Tail and we are awesome, which. I don't know, yeah, it's kind of a little, I find, but at the same time, the way it happens kind of makes sense. And I mean, personally, with the whole last week, with the whole Mira Jane coming out unscathed, I'm just going to say, it's like, I mean, duh. I mean, what else was going to happen? Her transformation is specifically to turn into a freaking demon. What did, I mean, anyone that says, that's convenient, I'm like, well... Yeah, but what else did you expect was going to happen? Did you forget the fact that her entire magic revolves around becoming a demon?
Yeah, once a lot of you, even though it's kind of pissed off, like, you know what, kind of funny, because he's kind of backfire bad.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, yeah, I mean, it's just like, come on, I mean, again, what else is going to happen? But, yeah.
Zara's here now, and Natsu's got that sword that Silver gave him, I think.
Or, well, yeah, gave him, or Natsu just managed to pick it up, but... Yeah, anyway, good chapter. I like. All right, Mo, it's your turn to talk about the seven deadly sins.
I talked about Fairy Tail, didn't I?
Oh, yeah, you're right. What the hell? Okay. Yeah. Seven Deadly Sins, chapter 67, Crack.
Crack.
Crack cocaine.
I'm kidding.
But, yeah, so the chapter focuses on Elizabeth. Son of a bitch. Diane. Not Elizabeth, Diane. Who has gotten... a laser beam through her chest. And it's not good. Yeah, it's not good. And she is kind of like, oh, I am hurt. But she's like, I'm going to keep fighting because I am a giant and that's what we do. And she gets laser beamed through the leg. Yeah. And then she gets blown away by that guy.
Dreyfus.
You know, I'm just, anytime I forget a character's name, I'm just going to call... Yeah, anytime I forget a character's name, I'm just going to call them S-Newt. But yeah.
But, sure?
Yeah. But carrying on, we find that S-Nerd falls onto the village. No. I remember her name. It's Diane. But yeah, she falls onto the village, and everyone's like, oh, it's one of the seven deadly sins. Oh no, what are we going to do? And then S-Nerd decides, hey, I'm going to tell you, hey, you should fight her because she's evil. No, it's Dreyfus. Right. Yeah, and then Diane is just trying to get away, and S-Nerd starts blowing up parts of the town to make it look like it's her doing it. And Gwila is not happy. Oh, Helbram, that's it, jeez.
Helbram.
Yeah, but Gwila is not happy because her little brother is in that city. So, not so good. But yeah, Helbram is basically saying, oh, you know, we just need a, you know... We just need to make things look worse so that it gets blamed on the deadly sin Diane and, what's her face?
Gwila.
Not her.
Jericho.
That's it, Jericho. I should remember that one. She starts questioning, is like, hey, wait a minute. Oh, no, wait a minute. No, it's not No, it's not. Oh no, you were right. Yeah, it's not Jericho that says it. It is Gwila.
Yeah,
The
it's
panel
Gwila.
layout. Yeah, the speech bubbles were a little confusing, but it's Gwila that says, "What about the information of the seven deadly sins plotting to overthrow the kingdom? Was that also a lie?" I was kind of thinking, it's like, wait, if that's Jericho saying it, then what she does later in the chapter doesn't make any sense. But if it is, but since it is actually Gwila, that makes sense. And yeah, we. Of course, the predictable happens, and it turns out that Zeal, Gwila's younger brother, runs out and he is about to be crushed by a building. And worth pointing out that Elizabeth, who has said, damn it, Diane, who has said that she is sick of this, screw humans, but she needs to save Elizabeth, is walking away and says, I hate these humans. But then she turns around and protects Zeal. And has a building fall on her, and she is the pass out. She basically, yeah, she passes out, and Jericho, who is pretty much awful, just asks to be the one to finish off Diane, just so that she can be given a higher rank for having finished her off. But then we find Hauser, who is this entire time has been having doubts about fighting against Diane because he knows she is a good person. Also, he might have a thing for big women.
Literally.
Yeah, just saying. There's a word for it, but I can't remember what it is.
Gigantophilia?
No. No, it's not that. There's a more sciencey sounding word that doesn't give away what it actually is.
Yeah, we know.
But yeah, his reasoning is, you told me to only use power when I think it's right. This is one of those times. Also, have you seen the size of that rack? Hot damn.
Oh boy, Kingston has some rivals.
Yeah, that's. I would be surprised if it didn't have something to do with the fact that he could use her rack as a bed. Or do what Luffy did to Shirahoshi.
Wait, what did he do to Shirahoshi?
Remember when he first meets her and he's walking around her room and he's like, oh, what's this coral? It's really bouncy. Oh, I swear there must be one hell of an editor working with Oda to keep One Piece Beat from becoming as depraved as Fairy Tail is. But yeah, we Hauser and Gwila, who has shown herself, hey, wait a minute, there's something fishy going on here, are defending Diane. And is
Dissension in the ranks. I
yeah,
won't say that.
this Yeah, this. I mean, I was kind of predicting Gwila was going to turn because she was, I was like, oh yeah, and Diane's gonna save her brother and stuff. But also seeing that how they do it with Hauser being the one first to, turn to defend her, and then you have Gwila joins in, and I'm like, dude, that is so badass. They're gonna get their asses kicked, but that is pretty badass. So, yeah, I love this chapter. This was really great. Yeah, Seven Deadly Sins has been really strong the past couple months or so. Again, it was kind of, I mean, it started off really strong, the series did, and I loved it. But then with the tournament arc again, it was kind of like, I don't know about this. But yeah, the past couple months have been pretty amazing, I have to say. And so I quite like, much enjoy. Wow. I really need to stop it with that meme.
Doge, yeah, the doge meme.
Yeah, the Doge or Doge or however that's pronounced, but.
I say doge because apparently the dog is Japanese.
That makes, oh yeah, that does make a lot more sense. But, okay, I think that kind of covers the entirety of everything, all the manga that we have to discuss, doesn't it? Oh,
This
thank
is a
goodness.
good week of chapters. Mine is another one for me.
It was quite a good week. But I say, all right, did you have any other last minute comments that you wanted to make?
Well, you're seeing Diane get injured that much. I hope she doesn't die, but that'd be kind of an interesting way to go with her
Yeah, I
character.
don't. Yeah, I'm pretty sure she's not going to die, but yeah, she has been injured
How is she
severely.
going to heal herself? The question.
That might be the next arc, is how can we fix Diane?
How can we fix Diane? Well, definitely, we're not going to use Band-Aid.
No, that's not gonna work.
Band-Aid, fix everything. Not this time, Zoro. Not this time.
I need 500 cu. I need 500 cubic meters of silicon stat. Actually, that is kind of weird. Her chest remains oddly shapely, despite the fact that there's a massive hole in it. But yeah, Anyway, I think it's about... Oh, man, we are... Every week, we betray what massive perverts we actually are.
You do?
Oh, yeah. Well, I do. And then you do when you add... And when you admit to recognizing some of those hentai manga that keep being released. Yes. All right, well, that being said, let's go ahead and move on to the next segment, by which I mean let's go ahead and wrap things up.
S-Note.
Yes, you pronounced that wrong. It's S-Note.
S-Note.
Note.
S-Note.
Stop that, that's embarrassing.
Okay.
This has been Manga Cubed, episode 86, for the week of February 24th, 2014. As always, I've been your main host, Derek, and I've been joined by my co-host, Mo.
Hello? Wait, didn't we just say hello?
Yes, I'm just saying, this is what happened, this is what they listened to, and now it is ending.
Oh, so. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so what we, let's see, actually, the gain on my mic is being a bit weird. I think that's better. Yeah, there we go, that's better, that's not too loud. Or actually, let me try this. There we go, okay. Sorry about that, folks. Anyway, as always, this week we discussed volumes 1 to 3 of season 2 of Genshiken. We also discussed the usual chapters, and it was good. So let's go ahead and wrap things up.
All right.
Starting with the author's comments, we had Ryogo Narita for Stealth Symphony. This is literally a manga where the main character is hard to see, but I hope you enjoy it.
So basically the main character is really Troma, not Jaeger. That makes sense. It makes sense. You know, it seemed like the protagonist would be Jig, but it starts with him. So, anyways, next one: Stealth Symphony's Yoichi Amano. I died from a bad cold while working on the first chapter. I'll do my best to take care of my health. Wait, if you died, why are you still like?
No.
I'm sorry.
Okay. One Piece's Eiichiro Oda. Live app stickers for One Piece have been released. Thank you so much to the Toy Anime Stuff. I can't wait to use them.
Cool. Okay.
I have no idea what that is.
Naruto of Masashi Kishimoto says, in order to get some exercise, I tried doing some push-ups for the first time in a while. But I had to quit after 3 sets of 15.
I know how he feels. I know exactly how he feels. Actually, that's a good idea, dude. Just do sets of smaller amounts. Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
All right. Toriko's Mitsutoshi Shimabukuro. I got a new desk and chair. I love my new big desk. Now to draw some manga.
Now to break it in again.
Yes.
Okay. Uichi's Titekubo. I went into a restaurant that opened up in the neighborhood, and they had soba with oysters. It was the best.
That does kind of sound good.
Oysters.
Alright, Nisekoi's Naoshikomi, we just had Valentine's Day, didn't we? How was it for everyone? Me? Don't ask. Oh no, what happened?
For someone who writes a shounen that has romance in gender. That kind of feels kind of suck.
Yeah, I can imagine. Alright, let's do the rankings, shall we?
Alright.
Okay, fourth place, Mo, what is your number 4?
I would say Bleach.
Okay. How come?
It's actually a pretty good chapter. I mean, in terms that Byakuya didn't steal the show.
Right.
And, you know, I thought, because last time he went in and just helped Rukia and stole Rukia's fight and all that. Old
thing. Right. Okay.
Did he? No, he didn't, but. No. Well, and then, you know, it was pretty good.
Well, yeah, the last time he didn't steal the fight from Rukia, he came and saved her. As she was being attacked by someone while she was unconscious, so it was never her fight to begin with. Alright, well, my number 4 is All You Need Is Kill.
Okay.
Yeah, I just liked it. I mean, it had some dumb moments, but I kind of liked the bit at the end where it was all about how he just keeps dying, like, over 158 times. And so I'm like, dude, that's pretty badass. It's kind of awful, but it's pretty badass. But yeah. All right, number three. What's your number three?
One Piece.
Seriously?
Yes.
You're dead to me. Okay, why is it only third place?
Because the chapter, I mean, it did have some things, but it wasn't as, it didn't feel great. I don't blame Oda. He took a break. He just came back warmed up again. So I'm expecting that he'll have some really great chapters later on again. And Tree Boy just kind of disgusting. I mean, sticky.
Fair enough. All right. Well, my number three was Stealth Symphony. I liked it, but it had some problems in that it was very predictable for a first chapter. So, but yeah, but it was still good. All right, what's your number two?
All You Need Is Kill.
Okay. You liked it more than I did? How come?
Well, the bit with the bit where he mentioned the migraines and how they happen and such, like, of course, he meant to sell it, but also the bit where, I guess, it was kind of a good chapter, although I was still weirded out by the fact that he just turned down a one-night stand that he probably wouldn't really give a damn about later on anyway, so.
Yeah, he could probably have an opportunity every single time, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, okay, my number two was Nisekoi.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just really funny, but it does lose some points because it's kind of the same thing that we've seen before with the chapters that focus on Tsugumi. So yeah, that's kind of a little eh. But it was still really, really, really funny. So that was just a minor issue. All right, number one.
Toriko for me.
Really? Okay.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Why is it number one for you?
Well, the billing burst thing was kind of interesting. You know, this is raising this dang bird the entire time that people are not going to really enjoy each. And yeah. Suddenly calling it ugly the whole time. But yeah, it was a pretty good captain.
Alright, fair enough. Let's see. Okay.
It was hard to rank all these four. I think they're probably out of place here. Man, but.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I think that, all right, my number one was One Piece.
Okay.
Partially because One Piece usually, even on a bad week, deserves to be in number one spot most of the time, especially after Cross-Manage got canceled. But with this chapter of One Piece, I just really liked it, okay? You know, it was the one that I enjoyed reading the most this week, as it usually is. And so I'd have to say that, yeah, it still deserves to be number one.
Oh, I wish this was in there somewhere. I just couldn't decide.
I know, this was kind of a hard week because there weren't really that many chapters that stood out for being amazing, but they were all just kind of good, you know?
It was just funny. It's going to show for me this time.
Right. Yeah, well, One Piece stayed at number one for me just because I really like kind of how we're getting into the, how the plot is advancing, and it looks like we're focusing on this one area, so we're learning a lot more about what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And so,
see Usopp do something finally, I hope.
Mm-hmm. And, yep. Alright then. I think that does it for this week's episode. As always, any questions or comments, send them to burninglizardstudios@gmail.com or go to burninglizardstudios.com. You can also find us on Twitter @burninglizard. And any questions that are asked will be read on the air. And I think that does it for the wrap-up. Did you have anything you wanted to add, Mo?
No, not really. I can't think of anything. I guess something was a good addition to the series. I hope that it will end up being good. Other than for you, it was a very predictable beginning. For me, it was just I wanted to see what's going to happen next. You know, I still. I'm looking at that color spread. I'm just hoping these colorful characters will actually get to appear.
Yeah, that would be kind of funny.
Never appearing.
Yeah, that would be funny if it got canceled before it had a chance.
Yeah.
So, okay then. Well, since there's nothing else to discuss this time, let's go ahead and finish up here. As usual, I've been your main host, Derek. Mo.
Oh yeah, joined by me, Mo.
Guest starring Mo.
Guest starring.
Yeah, longest guest star ever.
My co-host here.
Yeah, well, and we will see you all next week. Just remember, the manga is always better.